with the sweating, because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat.
Are you sweating now? You might be. In other news back home.
Daylight burglary this weekend as men wielding hammers break into a jeweller's in Richmond. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott at the scene with the latest.
Plus, Britain is set to become the biggest spender on benefits in the G7 within years, overtaking countries such as France, Italy and Germany. And the British countryside needs to be made less white environment and more friendly to minorities. Precisely how? Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party after further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. Documents released by US authorities suggest he received £55,000 from the late sex offender in the early 2000s. Lord Mandelson says the claims are false, but he's stepping down to save Labour from further embarrassment. Cabinet Minister Steve Reid told LBC yesterday he should testify before the US Congress about his links to Epstein.
With the latest revelations, allegations, whatever you want to call them, we really do need to understand what's gone on. And they're disturbing to look at. I feel the same way as other people will feel when they saw that picture of Peter Mandelson in his underpants, when he's telling us he doesn't know anything about what's gone on. Well, let's have some honesty. I've already said people should come forward if they have information to share. I hope he'll reflect on that.
The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year. The move's a key part of Donald Trump's peace plan. People who are allowed to leave in the next 24 hours will be subject to strict security checks. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has accused Keir Starmer of humiliating Britain on his trip to China. Writing exclusively for LBC, Dame Priti Patel says Keir went to Beijing from a position of weakness and got nothing in return. The Prime Minister left with deals on visa-free travel, whiskey tariffs and the lifting of sanctions against four MPs. You can read more on Dame Priti's comments on the LBC app. Home Office figures show more than 900 migrants crossed the Channel in small boats in January. It's the lowest number for the first month of the year since 2021. It's thought bad weather contributed to the drop. And hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. The government is urging head teachers to apply for the programme, with another 300,000 children set to benefit. We've been to a school in Slough, which has already got one.
It's really, like, fun. We get to eat eggs, fruit, bread and beans and toast.
I like eating pineapple most of the time.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,223. After closing up 51 on Friday, the pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some bright spells in the far west of Scotland. Later, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Subway knows you love a good deal. So say hello to Sub Yay. Weekly deals that will make you go, yay. Like money off your fave subs and spuds, getting bonus points on your order, or free upgrades to a meal deal. That's Sub Yay. Get all the best offers exclusively for Subway Rewards members. See the Subway app for specific offer availability and T's and C's.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, February the 2nd. The denials just keep on coming. Lord Mandelson now steps down from the Labour Party, but of course will stay in the House of Lords and enjoy these considerable benefits that comes with that, as he can't remember and not sure and thinks it's lies that in total £55,000 or $75,000 was paid to either him or his husband. So it's not true, but he'll stand down. It's a bit like Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, isn't it? Paying £12 million to a woman. He said, I did not have sex with her, but I'll pay £12 million. How much longer will this farce go on? And in praise of Sir Keir Starmer, who, in the latter of those two cases, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor says he has to now testify. Surely you agree? In other news, on a more global scale, here's Iran's supreme leader speaking over the weekend, warning the US of a potential regional war if Washington were to greenlight an attack.
I'll let you know I'm door.
This gentleman keeps claiming that we have brought warships and done this or that. I think you shouldn't scare the Iranian nation with such things, as it won't be affected by such remarks.
That's a bit rich. Did you see the tax list put out yesterday? Our 100 biggest taxpayers combined £5.7 billion in a year and are paying 15.5% more than they did last year. Can we stop with this nonsense of tax the rich? They've already been taxed to the hilt. Meanwhile, Julia Davis is a founding member of Patriotic Millionaires UK. She thinks people are not being paid enough for the work they do.
What is outrageous is that we have people doing the jobs in society that we absolutely rely on, that our society cannot function without, and they're not being paid enough.
The other end of the scale, if you will. And staying in the UK, daylight robbery in Richmond. We've already told you about that, and we have a reporter on her way there. This comes as... Cruise announces he's going to quit London because he's frightened of crime. Let's be honest, I very much doubt Mr. Cruise uses the night bus or the district line. So if he's frightened, dear God, what about the rest of us?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
By the way, if you have ever seen Tom Cruise on the night bus, or waiting on the district or circle line, or on one of those bicycles, do let me know, because somehow, I think when he says he doesn't feel safe in a part of London in which he lives, in Knightsbridge, that speaks to the rest of us, doesn't it? That's later in the show. Now, what a weekend of revelations. It started with those extraordinary pictures of, it would appear to be, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor on all fours, sort of semi-prone over a young woman who's lying flat on her back as if she's unconscious. Meanwhile, someone else is seen in the background with their feet up on a table without any socks on. The hell is going on in all these palaces and mansions? Well, there's a barrage of questions, of course, for Mountbatten Windsor to answer. I've to mention that picture. A second woman is allegedly claims she went sent to the UK to have sex with Andrew at Royal Lodge in Windsor in 2010. She'd have been in his in her early 20s. He'd have been in his early 50s. That's nice, isn't it? Now, these are coming from the lawyer. The revelations have increased the pressure on Andrew to testify before the US Congress, something the Prime Minister has called for, speaking with journalists on a flight leaving Shanghai following his visit to China. Following that, Housing Secretary Steve Reid was speaking to my LBC colleague Lewis Goodall and backed those calls.
I think the most important thing we can do, and the way to handle this, is to focus on the interests of the victims. There are an awful lot of young women who have experienced incredible levels of abuse, clearly. And anybody who has got information or insight that they can share that will help shine a light on what's gone wrong and help bring about closure and hopefully some sense of justice for those victims should share it. And that includes Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, who I do believe should testify.
Questions are also being asked whether Andrew Mountbatten Windsor should be removed from the line of succession. Now, it would take a minibus to go off a cliff for him to get anywhere near it. But this is something Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp shared his views on yesterday.
Given the allegations that have emerged, someone who faces this sort of allegation should not be, in my view, in the line of succession. That is, of course, for Parliament to take a look at. But speaking personally, that is certainly something I would support doing.
So that's Andrew. Meanwhile, last night, more news broke around someone else implicated in those files. Lord Mandelson, who resigned his membership of the Labour Party over his links to the late convicted paedophile. That happened late last night. Now, as part of the files on the weekend, we saw a photograph of Lord Mandelson in his underpants and documents suggesting Epstein made payments, as I said, of around £55,000, $75,000 in three separate transactions back in 2003 and four. Lord Mandelson was sacked as US ambassador last year because of his past relationship with Epstein. Speaking before the news broke, Housing Secretary Steve Reid was asked on LBC about whether the Prime Minister should take more decisive action with Mandelson.
With the latest revelations, allegations, whatever you want to call them, we really do need to understand what's gone on. And they're disturbing to look at. I feel the same way as other people will feel when they saw that picture of Peter Mandelson in his underpants, so when he's telling us he doesn't know anything about what's gone on. Well, let's have some honesty. I've already said people should come forward if they have information to share. I hope he'll reflect on that and what this image may or may not show.
Let's bring Rachel Maskell, who's Labour MP for York Central and who led the campaign for Andrew to be stripped of his royal titles, into the conversation. And we start with the intervention, speaking with journalists, of the Prime Minister. That's quite rare for any Prime Minister to comment on ongoing scandals involving members of the royal family. What do you take from that, Rachel Maskell? Good morning.
Morning. Well, absolutely. But we have got to remember, Steve Reid said, the victims and survivors at the heart of all of this. And of course, the justice needs to be found, and therefore it's right that the Prime Minister has called for Andrew to give evidence to under oath to the Congress investigation into Epstein, to say everything that he saw. But of course, what we've heard throughout the last few years is these rich and powerful men seeming to have amnesia over any associations and then what those associations are. So we need the truth on this. But of course, what we have also heard in these revelations is that a second victim has come forward to say that they also were subjugated, that they were exploited sexually, and as a result of that there must be a police investigation as well.
Well, I was going to mention that because these are the claims from this second woman's lawyer. It would seem on the face of this evidence that the Met or whichever force has to get involved, surely, Rachel Maskell?
Well, it seems quite astonishing that when Andrew lost his titles, that investigation seemed to come to a halt. I don't understand the reasoning for that, because there can't be an association with having titles and a police investigation, but certainly it must resume and must get to the truth of the matter, because ultimately he is accountable for his actions and must be investigated under the normal processes.
If Andrew doesn't go or doesn't testify, where does that leave him? Where does that leave the family?
Well, I think there are just so many questions at the moment that have got to be answered. And of course, we see that continuation of privilege, which is held within that family. Ultimately, if somebody has broken the law or indeed has assaulted a woman, then they have got to be held to account at the highest levels for those actions. So it is right that all the stops are brought out to get to the truth. That's what we all seek, because these people, and there are others named, we remember in Virginia Guthrie's book, which also listed other men. So I do think we've really got to ensure that all of these people give testimony to Congress so that there can be real justice found for all of those victims and survivors.
Lastly, while the Prime Minister's stance is to be welcomed as regards Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, his judgment in appointing Lord Mandelson has to be called into considerable question now, doesn't it? That's a terrible misstep in the eyes of the public.
Well, again, so many questions that need answering. But what I would say concerning Lord Mandelson, I think it would be right that he refers himself immediately to the Lords Commissioner for Standards. That would be the appropriate place. It would seem that there's been breaches, at least of the behaviour code in the past, the ministerial code, and also the code of conduct for peers. So I do think that a referral to the Commissioner for Standards in the Lords would be an appropriate next step for him.
Grateful for your time, Rachel Maskell, Labour MP for York Central, led the campaigning in the early days for Andrew. Successful campaign, now to be stripped of his royal titles 12 after 7. Let's stay with the royal aspect of this. Alexander Larman is a journalist. He also wrote Lazarus and Windsor's at War and joins me now. Same question I put to my MP contributor, if I may. If Andrew does not go, where does that leave him and where does that leave the firm, the family? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, on the one hand, I mean, I and I suppose most of your listeners are going to be feeling with Andrew, it's just another story. It's another humiliating story, which incidentally has once again shown that he's a liar. The fact that he was definitely in touch with Epstein in 2010, the fact that he was meeting Epstein at Buckingham Palace. I mean, all of these things are things that he denied having happened in his Newsnight interview in 2019. But the question now is, can he be compelled to give testimony in the United States? And Keir Starmer saying that he should, but I think that the argument that a British citizen should be compelled to head to another country there to be interrogated by their legal system, I mean, that's a dodgy argument, even if it's a figure like Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor. But on the other hand, I think that he's been given far too much tolerance. I mean, you can say he's been punished by having his royal titles stripped of him and thrown out of his house, but you just feel that this dreadful man who's, I mean, he denies all allegations against him, but the evidence now is so overwhelming and so damning that I think that anyone's sympathy is going to run out. The question is, what does the king do? What can the king do?
And also, surely, we now look at this second woman claiming she was lured to his Windsor home or trafficked for sex with Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor. That, you would have thought, Alexander, could interest the old bull, interest the police.
Well, that's the thing, because the police have so far been reluctant to look into any of the allegations against Andrew, because I suppose that's all they are at the moment, the allegations. But I've always said that there is going to be a tipping point at which Andrew's behaviour goes over from merely deeply unsavoury and deeply unpleasant into actually criminal. And when you start introducing people being trafficked for sex and sent over to various royal palaces, the whole thing becomes so grotesque that you start to think it might almost be a relief for him to be arrested and to be put on trial, because at least then he can have his say in a court of law.
Alexander Larman, you wrote Lazarus and Windsors at War. Thank you for that. And now over to you, either Lord Mandelson. Surely, as my contributor said there, they need to review this in the House of Lords. He shouldn't be able to turn up and take his hundreds of pounds for sitting there. How on earth can he sit over us as a lawmaker when it would appear, although he has no recollection, that he or his husband got $75,000 in 3 years? How can you forget $75,000? I mean, for the love of... And here's the other thing. Look, I've had an interesting life, I'm not going to lie, but... no one's ever taken a picture of me sort of on all fours over a woman who's pretending to have passed out, or standing in my underpants in a hotel suite with a woman in a full-length dressing gown. I mean, I've done a few mad things. How can any of us honestly say? I know I can't. But this is... And then there's another shot of Mandy sitting in a white dressing gown, presumably just with his pants on, with Epstein as well. Who's taking these pictures? Who the hell has got the candid camera? We'll take your views on that. On other global affairs, President Trump speaking about his hopes of reaching agreement with Iran over its nuclear program.
We have the biggest, most powerful ships in the world over there, very close, a couple of days, and hopefully we'll make a deal. If we don't make a deal, then we'll find out whether or not he was right.
7:15, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party after further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year, and hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain in the north and east, some brighter spells in the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. It was after an accident that happened earlier. Very busy on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South, and that was after that lorry broke down earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. There are delays on the A12 southbound towards the M25. It's very busy at Junction 12 at Mount Nessing because of an accident, and those queues go back to Junction 13 at Ingatestone. In Chislehurst, Summerhill is closed both ways after an accident, and that's causing lengthy delays in the area. On the trains on London Overground, there are severe delays on the Mildmay line between Willesden Junction and Stratford after a fire next to the tracks.
LBC.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 19 minutes after 7. Come to your reactions to the Epstein files. I get the sense this story will still be going. Even when I've retired, there'll still be revelations coming out. It looks particularly bad for the man who apparently doesn't sweat. I would imagine Andrew is sweating a little bit now, isn't he? And also Lord Mandelson, yet again. It's like an annual... It's not even annual this year. It comes around sort of every 6 months. Yet more disgrace for the former... What does it say of Keir Starmer's judgment, by the way? To make him Mandy in Washington. That wasn't the smartest move. Quick look at the front pages, and let me just... I think the only paper that I've got that changed up, because this broke, I think, I'm told, somewhere around 11 o'clock last night. I would have been asleep in it. Yeah. The Mail's got it on the front page. Disgraced Mandelson quits Labour. I won't go over all of the front pages, but the Daily Telegraph has that photograph of Lord Mandelson in his underpants with an unidentified woman in a full-length white bathrobe. What is going on over there? Mandelson faces order for Epstein evidence. That's also the front page of The Times. New Epstein victim. I was sent for sex with Andrew. That's the aspect of the story I was just exploring with one of my contributors. Let's take one other story at random. The Guardian. Mandelson under fire as files appear to show Epstein sent him $75,000. Well, we can move that on, actually. The folks who wrote the headlines. He's quit. But, of course, he's quit because he has no recollection of the $75,000. So you would quit, wouldn't you? It's like, I didn't have sex with that young woman in the United States, so I'm sending her $12 million. I mean, please. To the LBC app. What? Oh, I see. Peer in his pants. Sorry, I thought that's peer as in House of Lords. I thought that's like, take a good look. Because the woman does appear to be glancing down at that area. I see, peer in his pants as in House of Lords. That peer. Lord Mandelson resigns from Labour. One other at random. Here we go. Sky News is very excited about all the various stars. They seem to have photographs, mostly of female stars. Lady Gaga, Sabrina Carpenter, arriving for the Grammys. So there's photographs of that on the red carpet. Right, let's get to your reaction, peer in his pants. David in New Romney, you're on the radio. Good morning, David.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. It was just a thought. Whilst I agree that Andrew and Peter should definitely testify to Congress and tell what they know, it's interesting to note that the Congress seems to be going for any high-profile Brit. And yet I'm not hearing of any high-profile Americans that could be forced to go to Congress being forced. There's no news about that at all.
Oh, that's interesting. There's a sort of runners and riders, as it were, of all the various people. I know Howard Lutnick is meant to be involved, and of course there are questions over Bill Clinton. But just to continue with your theory, why do you suppose that might be?
Well, I think it's all about the news. I think it makes big news. You know, we've had a prince lose his title and lose everything else, and we've got Peter Mandelson and other stuff. I'm not saying that they shouldn't appear, but what I'm saying is they just seem to be missing out on. Why haven't we heard of any high-profile Americans who could be forced? They wouldn't be able to avoid it by not going.
Yep, you're absolutely right, I have to say. Not that I'm suggesting there's any illegality going on, but also Sir Richard Branson appears in some of the files, along with, as you rightly say, Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, and others. Just then, Donald Trump again, but of course he says that over the weekend he said that the files vindicate everything he said, so take from that what you will. Mandelson picking up £371, that's the payment you get if you go into the House of Lords. Surely he has to at least be suspended following an investigation there. David?
I agree with everything, yeah. I agree with everything, but I just, as I say, it's just my side of it.
And last question, one writer in the Daily Mail today, Stephen Glover, says that Andrew has done more damage to the royal family, or the most damage, since Edward, the man who would have been Edward VIII and his close links with Hitler. Is it on that same level?
Yeah, I think it is.
You think it's as bad as that? All right, thanks for that, David. Thanks for pointing out an interesting anomaly involving the United States. Let's come to another story in which they're very much involved, with Iran's supreme leader warning any attack would spark a regional conflict with the US if they were to continue to build up nearby forces. He says to his the Tanim news agency, Iranian news agency, the Americans should know that if they start a war, this time it will be a regional war. Meanwhile, Donald Trump had said earlier that Iran was in serious discussions. Let's hear a little bit, though, from the Iran supreme leader, obviously translated.
We are not the instigators and we do not seek to attack any country, but the Iranian nation will deliver a firm blow to anyone who attacks or harasses it. The Americans must be aware that if they wage war this time, it will be a regional war.
Let's bring into the conversation Dr. Anise Basiri Tabrizi, who's senior analyst at the risk consultancy firm Control Risks and associate fellow at Chatham House, specialising in Iranian geopolitics, and joins me now. Doctor, what happens next, do you think? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, we are fluctuating between the threat of war and the possibility of negotiations. It depends on the day, I guess. Now it seems that the negotiations are on the upper hand. There are discussions about potentially the leaders meeting in Turkey, nothing being set. But obviously, should that happen, it means that the prospects for war would be, if not completely cancelled, at least postponed for the next few days. But we know that things tend to change quite rapidly in this field. We have seen the same situation in June. In the middle of negotiation, attacks happen. So it's hard to say. I think the best way to look at it is, all scenarios are on the table at the moment.
Remind the listeners, if you would, Doctor, what are the US demands and then your interpretation of the likelihood of achieving them?
The main three demands appear to be related to Iran giving up enrichment, that is nuclear enrichment. That has been a red line from the Iranian side since this whole debacle on the nuclear issue started in 2003. We can talk about the prospects for that happening, obviously, but I think there is a slightly higher chance now, simply because since the war in June, the stockpiles have not been accessible by Iran, and therefore there has not been really any enrichment from the Iranian side. But it would still be a big ask from the Iranian side to give up on that. The other two issues are the ballistic missiles and at least the capping, if not the dismantlement of the ballistic missiles. And the third one is giving up on the support of Iranian proxies across the region. All three of them are, you know, they have been in the news and in the US demands for quite a long time. I think obviously Iran is in a different position now compared to the past in terms of its domestic and international weakness. But still, it's hard to see Iran giving up on what have been the core of its deterrent strategy for three decades and more.
Lastly, you mentioned domestic weakness. What do we understand to be the current position as regards the resistance from Iranians and indeed the number of deaths of protesters?
Well, at the moment, it doesn't appear there are any more demonstrations. This is not because there has been any concession from the Iranian side, from the regime side, on the demands of the population or reform or prospect for change. If anything, this is due to the heavy crackdown that has been exerted by the regime with, 1,000 more killed. We don't know the exact numbers yet, but they have been unprecedented in the history of the Islamic Republic. So I think even if demonstrations are not happening, it's because of fear and because of a lack of prospects for change, rather than satisfaction with the regime and what has been happening over the past few weeks. So I think the situation is quite volatile. The regime is feeling vulnerable externally and domestically. At the same time, however, we are far from seeing it collapse anytime soon, without any kind of other factors coming into the picture.
Grateful for your time. Thanks, Dr. Anise Basiri Tabrizi, who's with Control Risks and Associate Fellow at Chatham House 727. It's not that story, though, that's getting the telephone calls at the moment. It's the Epstein files providing yet more headlines around much of the world, certainly the US and the UK. Sadet and Rice Slip. Sadet, you want to talk about, I think, the Mandelson aspect, who quit last night, the Labour Party. What do you want to say? Good morning.
Hi, morning, Nick. It's obvious, when you look at the Sky, on Sky they were saying that there was emails sent from Epstein to, I think it was Mandelson's partner, Ronaldo.
Da Silva, yes, partner he was a partner then, his husband now, yeah.
Yeah, so they paid him the money. I mean, it's clearly obvious that he won't have any direct connection with this payment for whatever he's going to get in return. It's been paid to his partner instead of Mandelson having to maybe provide an allowance to him or whatever, and it's just been circumvented via the back door. If it happened to me or you, it's as plain as day, black and white, that, you know, you just diverted the money in a way that you don't want to try and be connected to it, but it's clearly obvious it is you.
I mean, you're absolutely right. He was one of the architects of the new Labour Party, but his house has come crashing down around him now. He always seems to have had this fatal fascination with people with lots of money, doesn't he?
Well, I don't think it's just him. I think it's every politician. I think it's every person in that sort of position, whether you're in business, power, whatever. But to make it as blatantly obvious as that, it just becomes like, are they that crass? Are they that, rather, you know, bravado-ish and, you know, cocky that they think, oh, you know, we can do it like this and no one's going to know, although it's just like, you know, it's so plain as though what he's done. And when he's saying he can't recall it, he can't remember it, well, he can't remember his partner receiving. It's like you're not knowing your wife. Oh, did you get £75,000 in your account for something?
And we never discuss. And it's not one of those things that sort of sticks out on the radar, because we regularly have billionaires paying £75,000 into her account. Sally, thank you. Have a good day. Neil, you'll be the next caller. You've got some strong views, but I hope you can hold the other side of the news when we can give you a bit more time to explain it. Also coming up after the news, well, we also have our regular look at the world of finance, but let's delve into the world of tax, and it's a little bit rich. Styles, and you will have seen in the tax list yesterday, he is one of the 100 biggest taxpayers, combining to put nearly £5.8 billion in the coffers. And this man's got a few quid. Tom Cruise loved the UK so much that he bought a £35 million home overlooking Hyde Park about 5 years ago. Now, because of his fear of crime, he's leaving London over safety fears. Isn't that the reality? Whatever the commissioner or the assistant commissioners or the mayor tries to tell us that crime is at an all-time low, it's not. And if Tom Cruise, and I don't say this in a nasty fashion at all, if Tom Cruise, with all the protection that he has, the bodyguards and goodness knows what else, and not often to be seen on the night bus, if he's scared, what the hell does it mean for the rest of us? 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party following claims he received £55,000 from the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The former cabinet minister has denied receiving the money, but says he's quitting to save Labour from further embarrassment. The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year. The reopening is a key part of President Trump's plan to end the conflict in Gaza. And hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. The government is urging head teachers to apply to the programme with another 300,000 children set to benefit. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and east. Some brighter spells in the far west of Scotland later, a high of 9 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It would have been an absolute farce to pay WASPI women some £10.3 billion in compensation. No one lost any money. The changes were announced 30 plus years ago with advertising campaigns and coverage. There were more letters set out in 2011, and I'm sorry to say, it's up to individuals to check their own financial arrangements.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33 coming up. It's a bit rich, the tax list of our 100 biggest taxpayers, who, by the way, have seen their contributions go up by 15.5%. Can we stop this idea? We must tax the rich more. Tax them more. Tax them more. Dear God, they'll be taxed. If we're not careful, they'll start leaving the country. Plus, Neil, you'll have your views on what you think should happen to Lord Mandelson. Staying with money, let's bring Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, into the conversation. And unfortunately, the first story we're going to cover has echoes or shades of so many conversations we've had already this year, which is jobs going, and that's what we're starting with. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, I know that people across the country tune in at precisely this time each day to have their spirits lifted. So let me oblige and look through the latest forecasts that have come in. This is from EY, the big accountancy firm. They run their EY Item Club, which is one of the best recognised sentiment trackers in the private sector. They're now forecasting that joblessness will reach a five-year high over the course of this year, peaking, they say, and I hope they're right, and that it doesn't climb higher, but peaking at 5.2% sometime in the first half of this year. Unemployment levels currently at 5.1%. That's the highest since January 2021, and we know what was going on then. This they attribute to the two sets of large-scale tax increases that have come in over the course of the previous two budgets, alongside global uncertainty, which is also expected to drag down growth. Now, they forecast the GDP growth for the UK this year will be 0.9%. And if that is the case, I'm afraid we're in for a very tricky time, because that is absolutely pathetic. On the upside, they say that the following year it could pick up to 1.3% and then indeed 1.4% by 2028. But if by 2028 1.4% is the best this country can muster, then I'm afraid things are pretty bleak indeed.
Let's move to other money matters. And well, we were already told that they're killing off the farmers, they're killing off the pub trade, they're killing off hospitality. What's the latest industry to cry foul?
Yes, I'm afraid I expect we're going to have to get used to this. This is regarding business rates, the council tax for businesses, if you like, and business properties. We know full well the uproar that was triggered by the increase on pubs, and indeed the Chancellor has announced a few hundred million quid to ease the pressure on pubs across the country. There was a huge pushback from members of the hospitality sector, everything from restaurants to hotels in particular, who are going to receive no such bailout. So they're struggling. And now I think we'll see sector by sector people are kicking off. We're going to be running a piece later today in City AM from people representing the hair and beauty sector, the high street hair and beauty sector, which I know you support keenly.
Indeed.
They've also got their concerns. But now we see that the music industry has got concerns. We've talked about the effect on live music venues, who did receive a little bit of support, but now we're hearing from people who are actually behind the scenes running music recording studios. And a letter has been sent by the people representing that industry, who warn of 90% increases in the tax they have to pay. In some cases, Nick, a 400% increase for the tax bill on recording studios. And the industry says this is just going to be utterly unsustainable, and the people are going to stop recording their music in the UK, they're going to head over to LA, they're going to head elsewhere, and that once this sector goes, it's not likely to come back. So we can feel for those businesses, of course. Whether the Chancellor is going to move again on any kind of wider relief across all sectors, I don't know. It doesn't look like she will.
Lastly, I don't know whether you practice it, but for many people who do, Dry January came to an end at the weekend, but it's not supported in the same numbers as it once was, Christian.
No, as somebody who didn't particularly show any discipline for the practice of Dry January, these figures do not wildly surprise me. But Dry January figures, and these are coming from Waitrose, show that actually it was more of a damp January, it must be said. In January 2022, for example, Waitrose alcohol sales were about 42% lower than other months of the year. This January, they were only 25% lower. And that there was a particular penchant for red wine, the retailer says. Now, maybe that's because temperatures were so utterly freezing at the beginning of the year. They also say that January the 12th appeared to be the date when most people abandoned their endeavours, and that's when shoppers started adding more wine, beer and spirits back into their baskets. And I'll just point out, Nick, looking at some latest figures that are coming out, that those that did stick to dry January, maybe for a little bit of a shock when they return to the supermarkets to buy a little bit of booze, given that the tax on alcohol increased as of yesterday. So a bottle of Scotch whiskey tax increase by 40 pence and a bottle of red wine's tax increase up by just about 15 pence. So if you held off, you might have saved money and you're going to need that because booze prices have gone up.
Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Let's talk around the same time tomorrow, 7:39. Neil in Croydon, let's talk now. Your view on Lord Mandelson in the wake of stories that broke last night. He's quit the Labour Party. Morning.
I think he's quit the Labour Party because there's the least he could do. He should have quit the Labour Party years ago. He's a disgrace and he should be fired. He should be fired from the House of Lords, along with that Michelle Moan. I mean, what's this all about? She's taken £120 million from the taxpayer, not had to pay for... These people are meant to make our laws.
They are our lawmakers, absolutely.
And they're still in place. Nothing's happened about them. Yet we're meant to be worrying about China. Xi wasn't on the Epstein files, was he?
He wasn't.
This is nonsense. It's happening right under our noses and nothing is happening about it. And we're just to sit around and take it. I'm having to borrow today some money from a friend of mine to pay some council tax. Because if I don't pay council tax, I could potentially get put in prison. And these people are milking millions from us.
Do you know if your friend is going to make you three settlements of $25,000 each and you're likely to forget about them? Because that's what Lord Mandelson reportedly did.
No, I could only wish. But that is not going to happen. And it's just outrageous. And apparently he took money, or his partner took money as well. I think £10,000 or £15,000.
Well, it was the payments that were then his partner, now his husband. That's where Epstein's money went first. Neil, I'm sorry, the financial straits. I hope you get yourself through. Well done for paying the tax, because you don't want to fall behind on things like that. And we will continue that conversation, Neil. I hope it goes as well as it can. And you manage to get that money back as soon as you possibly can. Now, if we're talking money, did you, like me, study yesterday's Sunday Times with considerable interest when they came out with their tax list? And they show that our 100 biggest taxpayers contributed a combined £5.7 billion, actually a little bit more, £5.75 billion. And to give that context, because context is all in these matters, that's 15.5% up on the previous year. So the oft-repeated mantra, we've got to tax the rich, we must tax the rich. Dear God, they're paying the sort of eye-watering tax as it is. Here with more details, Robert Watts, who's compiler of the Sunday Times tax list. Well, I've had time to go through it. You had a lot of time to prepare and write it. What are the headlines that jump out of you from the top 100, as it were? Morning, Robert.
Oh, morning, Nick. 14 people contributed more than £100 million this year. I mean, that's eye-watering sums. The guys at the top, Fred and Peter Doane, best known for the Betfred bookies across the high streets. If you're a gambling operator, you don't just pay corporation tax or employer's national insurance, you pay a raft of gambling duties as well. Further down the list, J.D. Weatherspoon founder, Sir Tim Martin, just under £200 million. Here's an amazing stat. Each Weatherspoon pub now contributes more than £1 million to the public finances each year. It's an extraordinary sum of money. And that's VAT, that's business rates, that's all sorts of other types of tax. But what I personally like about the list so much is are these hidden heroes of the economy, these very private companies you and I have barely heard of, making things like teaching aids, mm-hmm. baby milk, stair lifts, pies, pasties. There's a guy called Ross McMahon down in the foothills of the list who bought a baby milk factory in the Lake District from Heinz for £1 11 years ago, turned it into a very successful business called Kendall NutriChair. And this guy, Ross McMahon, makes his debut on the list this year with estimated tax of just over £13 million.
Better have a quick word on the footy, on the football. Erling Haaland, take the listeners through his tax payments.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time we're starting now to pick up Premier League footballers. Now, a lot of people are very concerned, well, these people earn huge sums of money. Well, yeah, but if they're here, if they're paying in the Premier League, it doesn't matter where they come from, they're paying UK income tax, UK national insurance. So Erling Haaland, £16.9 million. his tax liability. Mo Salah, £14.5 million. And you can see on the Sunday Times website now, you can go to it, we've done a special football list, which has got eight other Premier League stars as well.
As ever, thanks, Robert. Considerable body of work to put that together. Well done to you and your colleagues. Robert Watts, compiler of the Sunday Times tax list. Fascinating reading. Here's another one. J.K. Rowling, you know how everybody loves to hate her? Well, £47.5 million she's paid into tax. £47.5. Harry Styles, I think we've played some of his music, so let me just finally give you his figure. That's £24.7 million. So this idea, tax the rich, for the love of God, they're being taxed like there's no tomorrow, as it is. Kate is in Bushy to talk about Keir Starmer aspect of the Lord Mandelson story. What is it you want to say about the Labour leader? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I hope you're well.
I am.
Lovely to speak to you.
Thank you.
I wanted to just point out that we are forgetting about a proportion of people here, and that is the victims of Epstein and any sexual crimes. So the point I wanted to make is, why is that Keir and his party are very quick to say that Epstein and his rich friends and associates, their victims deserve justice. But when it comes to British girls and women who were victims of similar crimes from Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs in England, you can almost hear the tumbleweed blowing across the chamber of the House of Commons.
What do you think, what would you want to see the Prime Minister do in either one of those two areas?
Well, I want him to take a firmer stance and action. I think people want to see action. We've heard nothing about the inquiry getting underway. We've got victims who say they don't trust Parliament. They don't trust the people involved, the MPs, Jess Phillips and others. And it seems that everyone's quick to bang on, oh, the victims of Epstein, the victims of Epstein. What about the British girls that were victims as well?
Well said, Katie. Something we must not lose sight of. Well done for reminding us all. More calls coming on this. Abu, you are top of the list. But coming up after the news, we'll be speaking with a government minister about the rollout of...
From April onwards next year, another 2,000 will open, reaching 500,000 more children, lifting children out of poverty and backing families. And that is the difference a Labour government makes.
Breakfast clubs, as outlined there by Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson back in October. We'll have more on that after this. It's 7:45, LBC News Headlines, then Dominic Ellis.
One of the architects of New Labour, Lord Mandelson, has resigned from the party after further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year, and hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain in the north and east, brighter spells in the far west of Scotland. Later, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 20 at Kings Langley to 17 at Maple Cross. It's because a car broke down earlier. And then also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues from Junction 31 at Lakeside to Junction 30 at the A13. And a car has broken down. It's actually on the exit slip road at Junction 30, but those long delays back into the main carriageway. The M4's very slow eastbound to Junction 3 at the A312. The North Circular Road is blocked westbound just after the A10 junction at Edmonton after an accident. At Sloane Square, King's Road is closed both ways. In Stockwell, the A3 Clapham Road is closed northbound after an accident, and there are delays in the area.
This is LBC.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming tourists, cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8 is the time. It is Nick Ferrari at breakfast, so how appropriate that we now have a conversation about breakfasts, and indeed free breakfast clubs championed by this government. With it would appear more good news today, and here to give us more on that is Labour MP, Minister for Early Education and Equalities, Olivia Bailey. Minister, good to see you. Thanks very much for your time. What is it you and your colleagues are announcing this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, we're announcing that 500 more schools will be joining our free breakfast club programme from April. That's on top of the 750 schools who started last year, who between them have delivered more than 7 million breakfasts. And we're really excited about this because not only is it saving parents time and money, £450 over the course of the year, but it's also bringing wonderful benefits for children who get this wonderful nutritious breakfast, a great soft start to the day with benefits for attainment, attendance, behaviour and many others as well. So we're really excited to be driving towards all schools, all primary schools in England having a free breakfast club by the end of the Parliament.
And what would that number be, Minister? What, if we're at 750, how many schools would we have to get to in total?
I don't have the exact number of primary schools to hand, Nick, right. I'm afraid, but I do know that from September, we'll have 15% of all primary schools in England on the scheme, and we're driving towards every single primary school by the end of the Parliament, which is really exciting. And as I say, parents are telling us that this is making a big difference. Anybody with kids getting ready this morning knows how stressful the preschool run can be, and we're helping parents with this 30 minutes of extra free childcare.
OK, what does the breakfast look like?
So it depends on each school. So I was at a fantastic school last week in Slough. They had boiled eggs, toast, beans, a range of fruit. But it can depend. There's porridge. There's schools have the ability to choose what that breakfast should be, obviously using our school food standards to make sure that it is a nutritious breakfast for our children too.
And who prepares them? Do the catering staff have to come in earlier, Minister? Is that how it works?
Again, it depends on the school, Nick, and it's up to the school how they run this. We do provide funding for staffing for schools to use how they see fit. Sometimes it's the teachers are doing it, sometimes it's catering staff. It really depends school to school.
Okay. And how are schools selected to be part of the programme? Do they have to bid, or how does that work?
Yeah, so on the first phase, our early adopter phase, we're deliberately doing this in a phased approach so that we can learn lessons and roll it out well across the country. For the first phase, people applied and we picked schools from across the country. This most recent phase, that's starting from April, we've asked schools with a particularly high proportion of children on free school meals to apply because we really want to target educational inequalities and we know that's a good way to do it. For future phases, we'll announce in more detail how that will work. But as I say, we want every single primary school in England England to have one of these free breakfast clubs.
You don't know the number. Many would think perhaps you should. It's 16,000, roughly.
Thank you, 16,000.
Well, that's all right. Well yes, indeed. We're at 12:50 now. You can give the pledge that every single one will have it by the...
That's absolutely the pledge. Absolutely
the pledge. By next general election, which is a few years hence, I'm sure, all 16,000, they'll all have
that
it,
That is quite right, and it's currently going through into legislation in our Children, Wellbeing and Schools Bill, which is in Parliament at the moment. So, absolutely, parents can be assured that if they've got a child at primary school, by the end of this Parliament, they'll be a free breakfast club in their school.
And lastly, quality. Some people are saying quality control of the food. You would have been at school, but many years ago there was controversy over the sort of food that was being fed to secondary school children, the famous turkey Twizzler debate. I would imagine this food is carefully sourced, is it, hopefully?
Absolutely. We've got school food standards, right. Nick, which we want to make sure that children are eating healthy food. We expect schools to follow those. We're also going through the process at the moment of considering updates to those school food standards to make sure that our children are getting the healthiest possible food and enjoying eating healthy food.
All right. Now, some events have developed overnight. Lord Mandelson, one of the architects of course, the new Labour movement, has resigned the Labour Party over connections with Jeffrey Epstein. Does he need to be investigated by the Parliamentary Standards Committee?
First of all, can I just say that my thoughts are, having seen all these documents over the weekend, once again with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous, horrendous crimes, I'm glad that Peter Mandelson is no longer a member of the Labour Party. I think there are clearly questions that must be answered as a consequence of the documents that have been revealed over the weekend about the depth and extent of his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, around donations that it doesn't appear have been declared. And, you know, I would expect Peter Mandelson to want to answer those in his own time.
Right. My question was, should the Parliamentary Standards Committee get involved?
That's not a judgment for me.
We must have a view.
As I've said, I would like Peter Mandelson to answer questions about the documents that have been revealed over the weekend about the depth and extent of his relationship. I would most importantly like Peter Mandelson to come forward with any information at all that he has that could help secure justice for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous crimes.
Yes, yes.
And I would like him to do that.
But you don't have a view on the Parliamentary Standards Committee?
That's a question for Parliament to decide however
well, you are a member of Parliament, just to remind my listeners.
I'm not a member. I'm not somebody
who
makes
decisions about Parliamentary
Standards
Committee. You're not on the committee, I know, but you must have a view, surely,
As I have said, I think there are questions that really must be answered here.
Well, is it appropriate that he stays as a lawmaker, Minister?
So, as I understand, he is currently on a leave of absence from the House of Lords. I understand that he's told journalists, I don't know, that he has no intention of coming back. You know, it is the case that it is extremely difficult to remove a peer from the House of Lords.
As we've seen with Michelle Mayne. She also should go.
And you know, that is the situation as it currently
right.
stands.
OK. Your good folk of Reading West and Mid-Berkshire, many or will of them will commute into London. I wonder how concerned you are over safety here. You might not have had sight, but there is literally daylight robbery in Richmond on the weekend with thieves taking sledgehammers to the window of a jeweller. And Tom Cruise has decided to leave London for his own personal safety. I say again, you'll have many constituents who travel in and out of London. How concerned are you for their safety, Minister?
I have briefly seen the footage of that robbery in Richmond, and it is really, really, really shocking. I think that's one of the reasons why this government is investing in neighbourhood policing, so that we can respond to incidents like shoplifting properly. We can make sure that we're seeing police on our streets. I know that Sadiq Khan is doing the same in London, driving down serious crime and also the kind of everyday crime that we're also seeing that is making it really difficult for people
but
in
But my listeners don't think it is being driven down, Minister. When they see someone like Tom Cruise say, I don't feel safe, what are they meant to take from that?
Well, in my own constituency of Reading West and Mid-Berkshire, we've been seeing more police come into our area, more neighbourhood policing, more patrols as a consequence of the promises that this government is delivering on. That's making a difference because it's important people see the police. It's also making a difference that we're supporting police to respond to things like shoplifting, scrapping the ridiculous rules that the Tories put in place that made it hard for us to tackle shoplifting, and making sure that we really are tackling everyday crime because that is so important, as all of us know, to feel safe and happy in our community.
Finally, a ridiculous rule that the Conservatives did stick with was not to charge VAT on church and church property for their upkeep. After 20 years, that has now been changed by the Chancellor, Rachel Reeve, and campaigners said that will lead to churches closing. How on earth can you justify putting something that's not been done for two decades? Why tax our churches?
So, Nick, I'm really sorry. I don't have the details of this particular policy here. But more broadly, what I would say is, you know, churches play a wonderful role in our community. You know,
then why put VAT on the repairs? It's not been done for 20 years, Minister. I know you're not in the Treasury. I understand that. But I don't need to talk to you about how the Chancellor's budget has unravelled over the last few weeks and months. And here's surely another one that needs to be reviewed. Churches will close under Labour. Is that a good headline?
Churches are really important, Nick. You know, I'm really proud of the wonderful churches I have in my constituency. You know, I've been proud to support St Bartholomew's in Lower Basildon, Upper Basildon, who have been trying to repair their church roof. You know, as I say, I'm not a Treasury Minister, as you rightly say, but I know how important churches are for our communities.
All right, I'm grateful for your time, Olivia Bailey. Let's look at the upside. Over 500 new schools now joining the landmark Free Breakfast Club, taking the tally to around 1,250. My thanks to Oliver Bailey, Minister for Early Education and Equalities. Taking the time to 8 o'clock, it's news next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party over the latest revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. He says he wants to avoid causing the party further embarrassment. Lord Mandelson says he has no recollection of receiving £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. Labour MP Rachel Maskell has told Nick the former Cabinet Minister has urgent questions to answer.
I think it would be right that he refers himself immediately to the Lords Commissioner for Standards. That would be the appropriate place. It would seem that there's been breaches, at least of the behaviour code in the past, the ministerial code, and also the code of conduct for peers.
The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year. The reopening is a key part of President Trump's plan to end the conflict in Gaza. People who are allowed to leave in the next 24 hours will be subject to strict security checks. The Shadow Foreign Minister has accused Keir Starmer of what she calls being Beijing's useful idiot following his trip to China. Writing exclusively for LBC, Dame Priti Patel claimed Keir failed to raise concerns around China's espionage and human rights record. The Prime Minister has pushed back, claiming he did raise sensitive issues with his Chinese counterpart. You can read more of Dame Priti's comments on the LBC app. Hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. The government is urging headteachers to apply to the programme, with another 300,000 children set to benefit. Minister for Early Education Olivia Bailey has just spoken to Nick about the initiative.
From September, we'll have 15% of all primary schools in England on the scheme, and we're driving towards every single primary school by the end of the Parliament, which is really exciting. And as I say, parents are telling us that this is making a big difference. Anybody with kids getting ready this morning knows how stressful the pre-breakfast preschool run can be, and we're helping parents with this 30 minutes of extra free childcare.
And drivers will be able to compare fuel costs at petrol stations across the UK. The government's made it compulsory for garages to report their prices. The initiative is due to go live today. Labour has previously suggested the move could save households up to £40 per year. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,223. It closed up 51 on Friday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Brighter spells for the far west of Scotland later, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 8 on Monday, February the 2nd, coming up in this hour, while the one-time architect of New Labour finds the house crashing down around him, Lord Mandelson, Questions must surely also be directed to Sir Keir Starmer, ever appointing him to the post in the first place. Questions about his decision-making? We'll get into that and, of course, most importantly, take your views. Plus, the initiative to try and make the countryside become less white. If you're listening in a rural area, the Cotswolds, Herefordshire, the Lake District, I don't know, do you recognise the fact that you're not welcoming to non-white people? You did hear that correctly. Chief Executive of the Countryside Alliance, Tim Bonner, says...
All the evidence, all the data shows that racism is less of a problem in rural communities than it is in urban ones. The government's own hate crime statistics are very clear.
Isn't that the reality as opposed to the picture put out by DEFRA, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs? So calling all my rural listeners, how welcoming are you, and I trust you are, to those who don't have white skin? In other news, the danger that this country lurches now to handing out the most benefits in the entire G7. A whopping percent of what's called our GDP. And I'm afraid, folks, the number is only going one way. It's getting bigger and bigger as we're handing over more and more. And ahead of the Super Bowl, the most viewed sporting event on television on the planet, well, the lead act is Bad Bunny. No, me neither. Bad Bunny using his acceptance speech at the Grammys last night to hit out at Trump and his ICE team.
Before I say thanks to God, I'm going to say ICE out.
Now, it's hardly surprising that the music industry is going to be anti-Trump and anti-ICE, but what if he would do something like that during the Super Bowl? We'll look at the possibility later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Journalistically, the Epstein files, they just keep on giving, don't they? But we do need to note, of course, the agony behind the headlines of the female, the women who have suffered. Interestingly, with all the revelations, with all the allegations, there's only one person actually serving time behind bars, and that person's a woman. Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, daughter of the disgraced publisher Robert Maxwell. But back to more recent events, and over the weekend, pictures of... We've covered this, haven't we? Pictures of Andrew on all fours over a woman. Pictures of Lord Mandelson in his underpants, in a hotel, with an unknown woman in a full-length white bathrobe. As I said before, I've had a fairly lively life. I used to go around the world covering rock and roll and show business for the Sun newspapers. I've had some fun moments, and I don't, to my knowledge, no one's ever taken a picture of me my underpants in a hotel room. And I can certainly say no one's ever given me $75,000 in three payments, or my then-girlfriend or future wife or ex-wife, whichever one it might be. And I think if they had, I might have remembered it. But this is supposedly what's going on. Nor have I made a £12 million settlement to a young woman with whom I did not have sex. I can vouch for none of the above, but these people do. Now, not so much Andrew, but certainly as regards Mandelson, what does it say of Sir Keir Starmer? Now, you may recall, let's stay with Mandelson, our Mandy in Washington, as he once was, speaking with the BBC on his friendship with Epstein, a relationship that continued even following the late paedophile's conviction. Our former US ambassador was asked whether he could personally apologise to the victims.
I want to apologise to those women for a system that refused to hear their voices and did not give them the protection they were entitled to expect. That system gave him protection and not them. If I had known, if I was in any way complicit or culpable, of course I would apologise. But I was not culpable, I was not knowledgeable of what he was doing, and I regret and will regret to my dying day the fact that powerless women were not given the protection they were entitled to expect.
Later in the interview, attention turned to how the government handled the Mandelson scandal, specifically, how much Number 10 knew about the extent of his relationship with Epstein when he got the job as US ambassador.
They knew everything. I wish I'd had the opportunity to remind him of the circumstances of my relationship, my friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, and how I came to write the emails in the first place. I didn't. So I understand why he took the decision he did. But one thing I'm very clear about is I'm not going to seek to reopen or relitigate this issue. I'm moving on.
Well, are you? What about an investigation by the Parliamentary Standards Committee? A question I put in the earlier in the show, Minister for Early Education, Olivia Bailey. The question is, Minister, should Maud Mandelson be investigated by the Standards Committee?
First of all, can I just say that my thoughts are, having seen all these documents over the weekend, once again with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous, horrendous crimes, I'm glad that Peter Mandelson is no longer a member of the Labour Party. I think there are clearly questions that must be answered as a consequence of the documents that have been revealed over the weekend about the depth and extent of his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, around donations that it doesn't appear have been declared. I would expect Peter Mandelson to want to answer those in his own time.
Right. My question was, should the Parliamentary Standards Committee get involved?
That's not a judgment for
me. You must have a view.
As I've said, I think I would like Peter Mandelson to answer questions about the documents that have been revealed over the weekend about the depth and extent of his relationship. I would most importantly like Peter Mandelson to come forward with any information at all that he has that could help secure justice for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous crimes.
Yes, yes.
And I would like him to do that.
But you don't have a view on the Parliamentary Standards Committee?
That's a question for Parliament to decide
Well, you are a member of Parliament, just to remind my listeners.
As I have said, I think there are questions that really must be answered here.
Well, is it appropriate that he stays as a lawmaker, Minister?
So, as I understand, he is currently on a leave of absence from the House of Lords. I understand that he's told journalists, I don't know, that he has no intention of coming back. You know, it is the case that it is extremely difficult to remove a peer from the House of Lords.
As we've seen with Michelle Mohn. She also should go.
That is the situation as it currently right. stands.
Let's bring seasoned political commentator Trevor Kavanagh into the conversation, former political editor, columnist for The Sun newspaper, joining me now, someone who knows Lord Mandelson well. Trevor, if we are to take as truth what Peter Mandelson has said, and I know that's been an increasingly tortuous business, quotes, they knew everything about his appointment as our man in Washington. What does that say about Sir Keir's judgment and decision-making process? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think that it is Sir Keir Starmer who is now in the spotlight. Everything that has happened to Peter Mandelson was predicted, and indeed predicted, not least by myself, but many others too. We pointed out that Peter Mandelson had stayed in Epstein's luxury mansion in New York while he was actually serving time for his paedophile crime. And everybody knew, and so did certainly another 10 and Sir Keir Starmer. His appointment was a surprise and a scandal in itself, and it was doomed to this sort of conclusion from the moment it was made. And as a result of his defenestration, we've no ambassador in America at a very crucial moment and haven't had for some months.
You had close dealings with Peter, now Lord Mandelson, as they put the new Labour project together. How do you recall him? If I were asked you to paint a word picture of Peter Mandelson, what would it look like?
Well, I remember him as a very young apparatchik to the Labour Party, but a very influential one back in 1994, so more than 30 years ago, when he used to patrol the House of Commons press gallery, looking over the shoulders of journalists and telling them they couldn't write that about the Labour Party, and in many cases changed the story. He was very influential, very sinister, or would try to be. He looked a bit ludicrous with his new black moustache, which looked as if it had been pasted on, but it was remarkable how many people were prepared to dance to his tune. But the overriding and overwhelming characteristic of Peter Mandelson is summed up in his view that he had no objection to people being filthy rich, and indeed that was his aspiration. And there wasn't anyone who was filthy rich who didn't become a friend of Peter Mandelson, not least some of the most worrying and sinister of the Russian oligarchs, including the aluminium magnate Oleg Deripaska, who was involved in the aluminium wars, the brutal, bloody aluminium wars in Russia, but who, thanks to a dinner in Siberia with Peter Mandelson, was able to import his aluminium, or export to Europe his aluminium, And that was when Peter Mandelson was Trade Commissioner and actually lifted the ban on his. So, I mean, look, he's had his finger in the pie of various people. Now, this has come back to bite him. And I think his very good friend, Sir Trevor Phillips, the Sky News presenter, summed it up when he said that he was at best naive and foolish, at worst greedy and duplicitous. And I think I know which one I would choose.
What was his skill set, Trevor?
Well, he was actually, and is, a very clever man. I have to give this to him. He's one of the most, probably the cleverest political manipulator in Britain today and
really?
Throughout the
goodness.
Blair Brown years. I think that he had a strange mixture of extreme ability and disability in terms of the fact that he ruined his career three times.
Yes. There was a loan with a British peer, wasn't there? I remember, to facilitate a house purchase, as I recall, some years back.
Absolutely, yes. Well, that was illegal. In fact, for the same offence, a judge actually went to jail for lying to his building society in order to get a loan. And I'd like to claim that I was responsible for his second sacking, where he was very, very influential as a minister without portfolio under Blair, and was involved in the Hinduja passport
affair.
And I started asking questions at the early morning briefing with Alistair Campbell in Downing Street, and nobody piled in until I asked about the 10th question, and finally people saw this as a story, and he was gone by 4 o'clock.
So the second of his three is down to Trevor Kavanagh. Commenting on the third, Trevor, thanks as ever. Great having you on. Trevor Kavanagh, former political editor at The Sun, former columnist at The Sun as well, a veteran political watcher. Now over to you. We move away a little bit from Mandelson. What does it say about Sir Keir's decision-making if, as Lord Mandelson says, quotes, they knew everything prior to his appointment? Plus, calling all listeners in rural areas, so-called rural racism, you're not welcoming to those who don't have a white face. Corinne Towler is a professor of colonialism and heritage at the University of Leicester. She said,
somebody told us, for example, that a chef that he was working with said that all Asians should be killed. Somebody else said that somebody looked at him and said, look at that, and used the M word.
Outrageous. But surely that's not speaking for the whole of the British countryside, is it? It's 8.15, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party over the latest revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. From today, people found to be advertising illegal migration routes online could face up to 5 years in prison. And free breakfast clubs will be rolled out to another 500 primary schools in England from April. LBC weather. Cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and east. Brighter spells for the far west of Scotland. A high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The North Circular Road is closed westbound at the A10 junction at Edmonton. It's following a serious accident. The delays go all the way back to Walthamstow, but all the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. Still very slow on the A12 southbound from junction 13 at Ingatestone to junction 12 at Mount Nessing, and that's following an accident. In Chelsea, the King's Road is now partially blocked at Sloane Square, but it's still lengthy delays. Also delays in Chislehurst. Bromley Road is blocked in both directions following an accident, and that's causing lengthy delays in the area. On the underground, there are minor delays on the central line between White City and Ealing Broadway and also to West Ruislip.
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving.
UK residents aged 18 plus. Monzo personal account required. Capital at risk. T's and C's and fees may apply.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sun Life Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
18 minutes after 8, calls coming in on the Prime Minister, Jeffrey Epstein. Then there's not a welcome in the valleys. We'll be looking at that. Rural racism alive and well, living in the UK. I sincerely hope not, but we'll find out more. Abu in Croydon. Abu, let's talk a little bit about Keir Starmer and, of course, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Your take on events overnight. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, for taking my call. It's about the situation of Andrew. You know, I'm a dual citizen, and I'm very proud of my British passport. Yes. But to hear the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, suggesting that Andrew should face hearing in America is very disappointing.
Why?
You know, British should stand on their own, and they have a legal system here. You know, they should try Andrew and any suspect involved in this Epstein issue. But to take a British citizen out of this country to face trial in America is a disgrace to the British government.
If, and I hope we can all hear that word, if he has been involved in crimes that have taken place in the United States of America, Abu, he must face trial there.
Yes, but Americans have never faced trial in the UK, even though they commit crime in the UK.
There's a General Kevin Spacey, who was cleared, but he's a US citizen.
Yes.
He was taken to court in London for allegations from which he was cleared.
Yes, but what about that schoolboy who was killed by a road accident? They smuggled...
That's the Anne Sakoulis. I think his name was Harry Dunn. Yes.
They smuggled a lady out of this country.
Yes.
And they refused to for her to face trial.
But lastly, and I'm not saying he has, but if Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has committed crimes in the United States, that's the country where he must be tried, Abu. Surely you get that.
Yeah, but there is a legal system in this country. Britain should not be subordinate to America.
All right. Abu, I'm very grateful. Thank you. I'm just going to have to say I disagree with you on this, sir. I respect your position, and I'm not going to shout at you because there's too much intolerance as it is, but I think respectfully on this one you are wrong, but I'm grateful for you. Abu, have a good day. Scott in West Hampstead. Scott, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I think we now know why Lord Mandelson was known for such a long time as the Prince of Darkness. And he's not shedding enough light on what's going on, is he?
No, he's not. He's not. What does he need? Do you think now that he needs to be... Well, I think he needs to be investigated by the Parliamentary Standards Committee. Do you agree?
Absolutely agree with you, yes. And that should happen as soon as possible.
But will it, lastly? What do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think there are so many things covered up in our... You know, not just in this country, in other countries as well, but the political establishment, you know, they tend to sort of pull together close ranks and, but something, he does need to shed more light.
He does, I think. Both of them do. Lord Mandelson as well in the Standards Committee, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor over in the US. We will return to that story, but let's come to other matters. And this is the second lead on today's Daily Telegraph's front page. The British countryside needs to be made into a less white environment. Officials in rural areas, including the Chilterns and the Cotswolds, have said they need to attract more minorities under plans drawn up by DEFRA, that's Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. This follows reports commissioned by DEFRA that said the countryside would become irrelevant in a multicultural society as it was, and I quote, a, quotes, white environment enjoyed by the, quotes, white middle class. National Landscapes, which was called Areas of Outstanding Natural Beauty, and local councils have committed to a number of diversity targets. Diverse staff will be recruited, marketing material will be produced featuring people visibly from ethnic minorities and written in community languages. So is there some kind of rural racism going on? Femi Nylander is an activist and filmmaker and poet and joins me now. When you hear the headlines, indeed when you hear some of the details of the story, how do you react? Good morning.
Hello. I mean, of course, to anyone who knows anything about the history of race and geography in the country, it makes a degree of sense, right? At the end of the day, access to nature is not neutral. It's correlated with both class and race. It correlates with income, housing, tenure, and ethnicity. Minority and working class communities, they tend to be disproportionately concentrated in dense urban areas with less access to high quality green space, which is a legacy of post-war housing policy and labour migration patterns. We all know the kind of areas of London where you have big housing estates, where lots of Afro-Caribbean or Bangladeshi or other minority communities are gathered, kind of like sardines in massive housing estates. And at the end of the day, structural racism, and this is one of the things people say, what is structuralism? How can racism be structural? And structural racism doesn't require individual prejudice. It doesn't require someone to go around saying the N-word or the P-word. It's about historical decisions that systematically expose some groups to worse environments. And when one group has systematically poorer air quality, a greater lack of green space, limited access to kind of safe recreational nature, this has genuine effects. It means more stress and depression, higher cardiovascular risk, more childhood obesity, longer long-term NHS costs, all sorts of stuff. And so I think that it sounds like a good initiative.
But why is it that people from minorities don't want to go to the Chilterns?
Well, it's not just that they don't want to go to the Chilterns. It's a combination. It's one, historically, they haven't necessarily felt welcome in areas like the Chilterns.
In what way? In what way are they not made to feel welcome in the Chilterns or the Cotswolds or the Peak District or wherever you choose to go?
Well, firstly,
oh dear,
it's often a bit more expensive to live in places like that. The minorities tend to have less money, right? So as I said, it's related to class.
We do have poor white people as well, of course.
Well, I mean, yes, we have poor white people, of course, but the point is that being a minority is related to class. So you can say there's poor white people, but white people on average are richer than black people or Bangladeshi people or Pakistani people. So sitting there and going, we have poor white people, is just like, well, what's your point, Nick?
Well, the point I'm trying to make is, as you, I'm sure, are aware, you don't have to go through some sort of checkpoint or barrier process to get into the Cotswolds or the Peak District or the Lake District. So, and plenty of people, not particularly wealthy white people, will take a caravan up to the Lake District for their summer holidays or down to Dorset or whatever it might be. Why not the same? That's what I don't understand. Why is it felt we need an initiative?
I mean, again, the point I made, and even I mean, I grew up in a place called Darwin, right? You have often kind of a place called Darwin, there's an area within the city where there's Darwin Tower, and there's a natural kind of area. This initiative is not just about people taking a caravan. This initiative is about having minorities kind of move there and stay there. It's about averages, right? So you're saying there's poor white people. There's white people in council estates. We know that. We're saying on average, minorities tend to be less represented in rural areas. On average, minorities tend to be concentrated in poor urban environments. On average, minorities can't afford to live. I'm not talking about when they're working three jobs and they have very busy schedules and managing to take a weekend every now and then to see some trees. I'm talking about the people who have their wellies and go with their cows and have a massive bit of land and go and walk. And so I mean, you can kind of shrug your shoulders, but I mean, I've just explained to you.
I'm just trying to get a better take on it.
Okay, so what's your view on what I just explained to you about post-war migration patterns, concentration of urban minorities of ethnic minorities in areas where there's high degrees of urban poverty, the fact that ethnic minorities are more likely to have cardiovascular issues and the rest because of that and get less access to nature.
But yeah. It's not really pertinent to the conversation about the initiatives taken to try and get these folk to try and get into the countryside. And I'm just putting myself in the position of white people in rural areas who are in some way being dubbed almost as racist, and having grown up in Kent, in rural Kent, I just think that's unfair. It's not, okay, it's not so countryside, but it was a long time ago. I accept that. It was a long time ago that I was a young man in Kent.
Okay, so is rural England statistically more Brexit leaning than urban England? Do you know that? Is yes or no? Yes or no?
There's no need to be so aggressive. I don't have the.
No, it's not. It's a question. It's not aggressive. Don't have to label me as aggressive. I asked you a question and said yes or no.
You don't have
to label me as aggressive. Okay.
If you're going to let me get the answer out, I don't have the figures to hand. But what is the point you're seeking to make?
I know the figures, and it's true. Rural England is statistically more Brexit leaning.
What does that tell you?
Well, what does it tell you? It tells you that rural England was more amicable to the discourse, which was hostile to immigration, which was about taking back control.
You're not seriously suggesting people who voted Brexit
in many parts of rural England. You know what they call London?
No, I was wondering if you'd answer my question. We could do that in order. You're not suggesting that people who voted Brexit are necessarily racist, are you?
No, I'm saying that when you're in an area where the only minority, where there's maybe one black person in your entire school, and they're mixed race. When you're in an area where you don't see minorities, when you're in an area
are you suggesting that people who voted Brexit living in the countryside were in some way fueled by racism?
Nick, can you let me speak, please?
No, I'd like you to answer the question.
Can you let me finish my point?
No, I'd like you to answer the question, because you brought into the conversation...
Wait, I'm answering your question.
No, you're not. You brought into the conversation the question of Brexit. I've responded. You have the data. So are you suggesting that people who voted Brexit in the countryside are racists?
I'm suggesting that evidently, anyone can see that someone who voted against the economic interests of the UK, because Brexit has not been good for the UK, because of a narrative about immigration. I'm trying to answer your question. This is not how you do an interview, Nick.
Don't tell me how to interview, respectfully. I've been doing it for 45 years, 20 of something, which on the radio.
You're acting like Piers Morgan, Nick.
I don't know if that's necessarily bad. You're talking about a very close personal friend, so I have no problem being likened to Piers Morgan. I'd be a pound behind him. I'm late to the news. I really want you to answer this, Mr. Nylander. Can you just answer the point you're making, which is that if you're in the country and you're voted Brexit, you are in some way inspired by some kind of racist motive?
Okay, are you going to allow me 2 minutes answer my question without interrupting me?
No, if you just answer that now.
No, I will answer it when you.
Well, we've run out of time. I've given you every opportunity. Thank you, Femi Nylander, activist, filmmaker and poet. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the news, Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has resigned from the Labour Party following claims he received £55,000 from the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The former cabinet minister has denied receiving the money, but says he's quitting to save Labour from further embarrassment. From today, people found to be advertising illegal migration routes online could face up to 5 years in prison as part of the government's crackdown on ads which tell migrants how to get round immigration checks. And hundreds more primary schools in England will get free breakfast clubs from the spring. The government is urging head teachers to apply to the programme, with another 300,000 children set to benefit. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Brighter spells in the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge
at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Some kind of inherent racism in rural areas. It's not, but it's a long time since I lived in Kent. It's not that I recall. Chris in Preston. Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning. What can you tell me?
Hi, good morning. No, I'm sort of live in the countryside. I enjoy many country pursuits, and, yeah, and we have, you know, across the board in the Northwest, we have many people that from Black Asian communities that enjoy it as well. Mm-hmm. The one thing I would say is it's the culture side that I think, you know, people want to really keep alive, that I think has been pressed on by this government, that is quite, you know, there's many things that they're trying to do that is trying to sort of diminish traditional British culture. And I think if anyone is happy to come in to the countryside, no matter what colour you are, people, we're happy to have you as long as you want to emphasise, you know, the best of British culture.
Do we need an initiative such as the one that's being discussed here by that are being discussed by DEFRA?
I'm a big fan of highlighting the benefits of being in the countryside and spending time in the countryside to everyone, but I don't think, you know, a specific initiative is needed. I think, you know, there's multiple people out there doing multiple things that show, you know, the benefits of it. I think if you really need massive initiatives and more government spending to you know, tell you to get outside and get some fresh air, I think maybe that's a little bit lost. But I don't think the countryside is racist at all. I think it's, you know, it's a pleasant place to be. Just keep it clean, keep it tidy.
Yeah, lastly, to the point my contributor, Mr. Nylander, was making, why is it that so many people, possibly non-white people, have stayed in towns? And in some instances, there are the poorer side of towns, and they've not been able or felt able to go into rural areas and put together housing or work there. I wonder why that might be, lastly, Chris.
I would say it's choice. There's many houses that are in the countryside that are cheaper than city houses. If you want to live in central London or in London and pay absolute sky high, you can. Mm. I live in the northwest, and you can pick up a two-bed cottage up there for between 150 to 250k for a house. Right, it's available.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, take the initiative yourself. Don't look for everyone to sort of hold your hand and do it. Go and do it yourself.
Chris, thank you for getting us started. Stephen's in Huddersfield. Stephen, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick.
Hello,
I'm just saying that I'm Black, British, and I love the countryside. My favourite places are like the Peak Districts, Wales, mm-hmm, Scotland, and I've never experienced any animosity, any racism.
The minute you arrive in the Peaks or the Lake, do you feel welcome from the moment you pull up in your car or
absolutely
motorbike?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I tell you, Nick, when me and my wife were going abroad, like, we going to the airport, I said, why don't we get more excited knowing that I'm going to get in the car, drive on the motorway to Wales. Mm. Wales is probably my favourite place in the world. And I could move there. And I think we've just got to stop using race and colour as an excuse. It's about behaviour and how you treat people and how you respect yourself and respect others.
I've got to ask you the same question then. Do you think these initiatives are necessary, or is it just going to be really quite a waste of money?
Absolute waste of time and money. It's just something, another thing that they just need to just jump on the bandwagon.
Enjoy the countryside next time you go, Stephen. Thank you. Dilip is in Aberton. Where the heck is Aberton? Aberton, is that right?
Aberton.
Aberton. Where is Aberton, my friend?
No, London. Okay, but the thing is, basically, I used to live in Chorley.
Right. In Lancashire.
Yeah. And I don't know if you count it as rural or not.
Right. I'm not familiar. But, yeah, go on.
Okay, it's totally not racist at all. Okay, so we're from India, and we moved there, and they were all welcoming.
Right.
Everyone was welcoming. Everyone was perfect.
Right.
But my main point is, I do apologise. So the first thing, I you're an expert. I love you. And I've been meaning to ring you.
Oh, how lovely. Thank you.
Okay, the thing is, though, it's the perception that people have of us.
Sorry, of us being... You've got to help me a little with us.
Brown.
I see, right. The perception of people in the countryside have towards you. Is that what you're saying? Sorry.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Yeah. And what do you believe that perception to be?
We're just here to take the money of the government.
Right. How does that show itself, Dylan? How does that show itself?
Okay, look, I was born and bred here. I've not had no help from no one else, and I'm okay. I've got two houses. I'm doing well.
Well done.
That just shows. That you could do it. Or anyone could do it. Or even though you're white, green, brown, orange, anyone can do it in this country.
Mm.
So there's the help. There's the backing in the country.
Right. So. I'm sorry, I'm sure it's my fault. Your message to DEFRA then as regards these initiatives would be yes, they're needed or no, they're not, Dilip. Just spell that out for me.
They are needed, yes.
They are needed.
Yes.
Okay, because you have, even though you were born in the countryside, you still have experienced it.
No, I wasn't born in Kansas. I was born in London.
You were born in London. I'm sorry.
Yes, but I'll be...
But you're out in Essex now, are you? Are you where I think you are, Abbotton, in Essex?
No, London. Wembley.
I'm sorry, I've got it down as... Alperton. I'm so sorry. My colleague didn't get the right town. I see what you're saying. You're in Alperton. Right, so you spent your whole... Okay, so the initial necessary. I'm so sorry, I'll have a word with someone who... It's quite a good idea to find out where people are calling from. It's a basic principle. We'll see if we can get it right. Thank you. Have a good day, Dilip. 8:39 is the time. Lisa's in Wrexham. Lisa, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to talk about my experience of racism in rural... So I work for the NHS and I've travelled up and down the country.
Yep.
And I have been in Cumbria where I've wanted a sandwich and they've basically said to me, oh, we're closing soon. Didn't serve me and then served two people behind me.
That's outrageous.
And then I asked her for my sandwich again. She went and she made it and then she threw it at me. And then I worked in Shropshire for 3.5 years, again with the NHS, and I went to a really popular pub in Shrewsbury, and they were serving a person in front of me. I then stepped into that position. They didn't serve me. They served the people behind me. And then when I saw a manager and said, I think I've been standing here for nearly 20 minutes, and they've walked past me, and I've said to them, I feel like I'm invisible. And he didn't believe me. And he said, oh, there's a CCTV camera up there. We'll check, shall we? And I've been waiting there 21 and a half minutes.
Those instances are appalling. How often, though, are you treated in that fashion? Do you work in the countryside all the time, Lisa?
No, I flit between...
You go, I see. So, for every 10 trips or business meetings, business work meetings you have to conduct in the countryside, how many would you experience behaviour in that fashion?
I would say, maybe 25%,
30%.
Really? The fear then is always... Because I've been in a supermarket, picked up an apple, and then, you change your mind, and there was a man behind me, got his pen out and moved the apple that I touched out of the way.
Oh,
so
crikey.
So although it might not happen every time, there's now then a worry and a fear about how... And today's my first day in Wrexham, and actually I was really anxious about working in Wrexham, based on my experiences that I've had. So that was really the contribution that I wanted.
So far, you're having... Wrexham's quite a built-up area, though, isn't it? I mean, I think it is a city. It's certainly a town. So, you have a safe day there. Thank you for that. Let's go to the emails, texts and tweets. I haven't done enough of... I don't have any of them, actually. Richie says, go to Windermere, full of foreign tourists. No one is stopping anyone from enjoying the countryside. It's all love. Rich in Bristol. I don't think this is a race issue. It's a culture issue. Rural areas don't think much of city dwellers, regardless of their colour, which, if you're black, you could perceive as racism. People assimilate into rural British culture. Also, I didn't do enough emails on other subjects, so let me just carve out a minute to do some of those. The Peter Mandelson scandal. Ian says, if a cabinet minister accepted money to influence government policy for the benefit of a benefactor, surely that might be misconduct in a public office. Shouldn't that person be investigated for criminality? In the first hour, we discussed the provision of breakfast clubs. Tim was listening and said the early schools minister didn't know the number of primary schools in England. No wonder this government is so incompetent. That same subject, Joe, from what Wheathampstead says, baked beans doesn't sound a very healthy option. It's got a lot of sugar in. And lastly, this comes from Ben Shergold. Is this really a free breakfast? Consecutive governments' mismanagement of inflation and overtaxing is why every individual can't pay for their daily goods. All right, that's covered some of that. Let's go back to the countryside and through the eyes of Claire in Colchester, which is in the countryside to a degree, but is a big town. Good morning.
Hi, yeah, I'm not actually in Colchester. I'm in a place called Brightlingsea, which comes under the, area of Colchester. So it's a small town, North Essex.
Is it quite countryside round Brighton?
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's lovely. We've been here about 4.5 years. My husband's Black British. My daughter is mixed heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's lovely here, and the people are lovely here. I'm not saying they're not racist people here. I mean, I'm sure there are, but we've never had any experienced anything. We've only been really, really welcomed. We get involved in all of the charities, the local charities. They are quite historic. It's a sink port, like an arm of Sandwich. It's very historic.
Right.
My husband's got very involved in that and the charities for that, and he's like a free man of Brighton Sea now and all of those things. So we do get very involved. So I'm not saying there isn't any, but we've not experienced any at all. And our friends that visit have never done. Everyone says hello here.
So what do you make of this idea that DEFRA says, as obviously it's going to cost quite a lot of money to draw up these special initiatives, so to make it more relevant to people who are non-white, or less white, I should say.
Mm.
How would you make of that?
I mean, I don't think it's needed particularly. I think... this is me personally.
Mm.
I don't know for other people's experiences. And remember, obviously, I am white, and I'm talking
about
my husband and my
daughter.
Exactly right, Black British. I don't think they're needed. I think your caller before was quite right. These rural places or small towns or very historic places or rural countryside, they are steeped in a lot of tradition, and you know they can feel a bit in the past, and you just have to embrace that. And I think if you embrace it,
so in a sense they don't automatically take to city dwellers irrespective of their
skin. They're not keen on that at all.
I don't think it's anything to do with skin colour. Claire, have yourself a good one in Brightlingsea. Thank you for that. Hassan in Slough. Hassan, your view of the countryside. Good morning.
Yes, I love the countryside. I'm from an ethnic minority. I'm Bangladeshi origin.
Mm.
I disagree with your guest vehemently. It is a bit condescending to have marketing campaigns aimed at ethnic minorities to move to countryside.
Mm. In what way is it? It's a good point you make, actually, but spell out why you think it's condescending.
Because I think ethnic minorities are quite well aware of the benefits of the countryside. And also, he talked about the class and ethnic minorities not having enough funds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the last 30 years, ethnic minorities have progressed economically, so they certainly will have the financial power to move there. I have lived in the countryside. I've lived in Horsham, lovely area.
Mm-hmm.
I did stand for the West Sussex County elections at that time in 2001,
mm-hmm.
and I was supported. It was a really, really good experience. So not everyone wants to live in the countryside, so there's no point having this silly marketing campaign aimed at ethnic minorities.
Enjoy the countryside next time you go there. Hassan, thank you for that. Coming up after the news, Bad Bunny, the star, Puerto Rican megastar, it says here, and his Grammy acceptance speech last night.
Before I say thanks to God, I'm going to say eyes out.
Now, the Bunny is scheduled to be the act at this next coming weekend's Super Bowl, which, of course, is one of the most viewed events on television. Will that go ahead? We'll give you the background to that after this. It's just turned 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Has called for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following the latest revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. From today, people found to be advertising illegal migration routes online could face up to 5 years in prison, and free breakfast clubs will be rolled out to another 500 primary schools in England from April. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east, brighter spells in the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The North Circular Road remains closed westbound at the A10 junction at Edmonton. It's following an accident, and those delays go all the way back to Walthamstow, but the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. On the M25, very busy clockwise at junction 18 at Chorley Wood. There was an accident that happened earlier. Everything's open, but it's slow back to 17 at Maple Cross. In Chislehurst, the Bromley Road is closed in both directions following an accident, and the King's Road in Chelsea is partially blocked both ways at Sloane Square, and that's also after an accident. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central Line to and from White City to Ealing Broadway and West Ruislip.
LBC.
Okay, done. Move that. And, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'm late for that!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine is the time. Let's take a couple more of the emails, texts that are coming in on this initiative for non-white people in the countryside. Now, Sarah's texted from Shrewsbury. I live in Shrewsbury. It's a horrible, clicky little town. I've lived here 30 years and I still feel like an outsider, and I'm white. I'm sorry for Lisa's experience. Lisa is a woman who was calling us from Wrexham, and she explained a bad time she had trying to get us, as I recall, I think it was a sandwich or service, certainly in Shrewsbury. I feel sorry for Lisa's experience, but it's sadly very much on point for Salopians. Salopians are people, of course, natives of Shrewsbury. Jahanara Ali says, people have preconceived ideas of white communities. I'm sorry, if a family of white people walking through Alum Rock, people would turn their heads and look, and we'd probably get a few stares in Great Malvern, but it's usually out of curiosity rather than racism. Justine's in Heathfield on this. Justine, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. First time call. A little bit nervous, so bear with me.
Nothing to be nervous about. Go ahead.
I grew up in inner London, in Plaistow, moved to Heathfield, mixed race girl, and I can honestly say what everybody's saying on the radio is absolutely rubbish.
Right. Tell me why you think it's rubbish.
That racism, they are more welcoming than an inner city. I've experienced racism myself living in London.
I'm sorry to hear.
Never have I done that in Heathfield or in my little village.
Right.
And they go on Black Lives Matter marches. They are so accepting to everybody and anybody. And the thought that just because they voted Brexit makes them racist is rubbish.
Well, he didn't actually say... I sense he was indicating that, but we didn't actually get him to say that. Why do you suppose, then, there is this sense, and why is it DEFRA think it needs to spend this amount of money?
I think at the moment... I'm a bit late to the conversation, so I don't know what sparked the conversation, but I think at the moment, because of the situation with the migrants, it sparked this conversation. And then automatically these people are deemed as racism or racist, and they're not.
No. You've always been made to feel welcome.
Always. I've never experienced, ever. And, you know, we have a few... when I first moved, yes, we was predominantly a white community, or it was predominantly a white community. We had people from... very few people from different backgrounds, but we was all very welcoming, and the town was very welcoming.
Justine, that's an interesting point. I wonder if this is something that evolves rather than revolutionary, i.e. more people who are non-white will move to Heathfield and then they will feel more comfortable, and it's just something that time takes care of, in a sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Absolutely.
Justine, have a safe day. Thank you for that. Let's move to other matters. Music, matters of music, but also politics, I'm afraid. Here's Bad Bunny's best work.
On VIP, hey. Saluden a Tisti, vamos a tirarnos un selfie. Say cheese, que sonrían las que ya les metí. Un VIP, saluden a Tisti, vamos a tirarnos un selfie.
Right, well, there's some of his finest work. Now, at the Grammys, he became the first Spanish-language artist to win Album of the Year for, Debí Tirar Más Fotos, whatever that means. He's Puerto Rican. He also won Best Latin Urban Album. And here he is, making his acceptance speech turn a little bit political.
Before I say thanks to God, I'm going to say eyes out. We're not savage, we're not animals, we're not aliens, we are humans, and we are Americans.
Now, there's nothing new in music stars going after the government. Who can forget Chumbawamba throwing a jug of water over the late John Prescott's head? But what do we take from this, not least as he, Bad Bunny, is due to be at the Super Bowl? Let's turn to Matt Charlton, music writer and broadcaster. OK, what can you tell us about Bad Bunny? Not least, presumably, that's not his name that he was given at christening or whatever.
Well, I'll do a brief translation for you. Debí Tirar Más Fotos is we should take more photos.
Take more photos.
Which,
right.
Given ISIS actions over the last few weeks, we definitely should take more photos of what they're doing,
right.
Too. So, yes, his real name is Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio.
Right.
So there's a nice mouthful for you.
I'm going to stick with Bad Bunny.
Yeah, I think that is much. I think that's probably why he stuck with Bad Bunny too. He's from Puerto Rico, which is obviously a protectorate of the US and not an actual state, which means they don't get voting rights in the Senate. And he mainly sings reggaeton, which is one of the biggest genres going at the moment. When you go to America, especially the more Latino communities, but the more urban communities too, you hear it absolutely everywhere, blasting from the bodegas and the cars. It's everywhere.
What? Going into last night, Matt, was it thought that he would do well, or what kind of surprise was it that he got the gongs he did?
It wasn't a surprise at all, but it was a real moment because, as you said, it was the first Spanish language album ever in the Grammy's 67-year history.
Wow.
To win Best Album. And it does show the change of the makeup of America and the tastes of America. And I think it really does show the direction it's going in and what people want. It's a very multiracial place that isn't represented by the government. And I think that's maybe what they were saying.
Now, he's slated for Super Bowl, is that right?
He is. He's doing the halftime show this weekend.
Was that a surprise when it was announced it was Bad Bunny, Matt?
I think it was. I mean, sort of, but he is so... I mean, the numbers are so big that you can't really argue with the numbers, but it's not like Michael Jackson. It's not someone your parents would know. So in that way, it was a surprise. But no, numbers-wise, absolutely not. And it's going to be a real moment. As you said, it is the televisual moment in America for the whole year, actually. That's where you get the big commercials, where the big spend on the big commercials, and he's going to have a massive platform.
And I know no one knows, possibly not even Bad Bunny himself, but any likelihood he might go a bit political? What do we think?
I think, without a doubt, there will be some political moments.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine there might be some dancing policemen or something like that. Just something to make... I mean, this is my guess. You know, I haven't heard any rumours, but there's going to be some moment where there is a political stance. You can't help it. Musicians have that opportunity to take the stance that a lot of other people can't, and their followers can't. So if he doesn't do it, I think there might be some backlash there.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for filling in so many grey areas of my knowledge, but every day is a school day. Matt Charlton gave me my lesson today. He's music writer and broadcaster. Thank you. 3 to 9. Dominic's also given me a lesson. I'm sorry, sorry. Did I, Dominic, and thank you for texting in. An earlier text talked about Salopians. And did I say they're from Shrewsbury? I'm so sorry. They're from Shropshire. So we were talking about events in Shrewsbury. So if I said they were from Shrewsbury, I'm sorry. Of course, you are a Salopian, and it applies to the entire county of Shropshire. OK, let's get back in. Probably finish more on that than we will on Bad Bunny. Chanel's in Huntingdon. Chanel, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Yes. What happened with you, then? What's the story you want to tell about the countryside?
So, yeah, I just wanted to explain about the story that I've received, well, an experience that I've received. So we moved, we was born and brought up in London. We moved to a rural area of Huntingdon. Mm. And when we first moved up here, like, my daughter's mixed race. Mm. And she would walk through the village, and at one point when she was walking through the village as a child as well, she would get caught. She was being called monkey by a few people that were standing on the side. They were youngsters.
Right.
And then we also took on a local village pub where we experienced many racist issues, where of Turkish origin ourselves.
Right.
And then when we did hand back the pub, we was experienced terrible racism on Facebook, where locals had put up, "Thank God the foreigners have left our traditional English pub."
Oh, great.
So, yeah.
That's outrageous.
I don't like kind of getting involved in the racist kind of aspects of it, but moving to kind of rural areas, there is that racism that is still there. But now at the moment, I must say, it has changed a lot, and there is a lot of multicultural people, shall I say, within the area now.
Right.
So it has changed a lot, and to the fact that I didn't, I went through an appeal process as well, because I didn't want my daughter to go to a school that was local in the village. I wanted to go to her to go to one that was more located in the town centre, where there was more of a multicultural background.
And how's that
within that
out?
School. Yeah, she's been completely fine. She's fantastic there. But now I must say the local schools have more people that with different types of backgrounds now, as opposed to just white.
So it's evolutionary again, isn't it, possibly? Isn't
yes, it is.
And that may well be the way forward. Chanel, I'm sorry to hear about your experiences, and I'm glad that's working out at the school for you. Chanel, have a good day. The music means we have to move on. Apologies. Many people who want to come back to this conversation. Coming up after the news, Sick Britain will hand out the most benefits in entire G7, and the numbers only going one way. Plus, says, "I'm out of here. I'm a celebrity, and get me out of here. Get me out of London." His £35 million apartment near Knightsbridge, because he simply doesn't feel safe walking through the park. And in a related story, daylight robbery, literally. The jewellers in Richmond had its windows smashed out in broad daylight. And we're told it's safe in London. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, there are calls for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. He resigned from the Labour Party last night, saying that he wants to avoid causing the party further embarrassment. Lord Mandelson has denied claims he received £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. Speaking to Nick, the government minister, Olivia Bailey, wouldn't say whether she backed the standards watchdog getting involved.
I would most importantly like Peter Mandelson to come forward with any information at all that he has that could help secure justice for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein's horrendous crimes.
Yes, but you don't have a view on the Parliamentary Standards Committee.
That's a question for Parliament to decide however...
Well, you are a member of Parliament, just to remind my listeners.
I'm not a member. I'm not somebody
who
makes
decisions about Parliamentary Standards Committee. You're not on the committee, I know, but you must have a view, surely, about...
As I have said, I think there are questions that really must be answered.
The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year. The limited opening is a key part of President Trump's plan to end the conflict in Gaza. An Egyptian official says 50 Palestinians will cross in each direction on the first day. People found to be advertising illegal migration routes online could face up to 5 years in prison. It's part of changes to the Border Security and Immigration Act coming into force today. The new powers mean officials will be able to prosecute proactively when they find ads online. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has accused Keir Starmer of humiliating Britain on his trip to China. Writing exclusively for LBC, Dame Priti Patel says Keir went to Beijing from a position of weakness and got nothing in return. The Prime Minister left with deals on visa-free travel, whiskey tariffs and the lifting of sanctions against four MPs. You can read more of Dame Priti's comments on the LBC app. And musicians have used the Grammy Awards to protest against President Trump's immigration crackdown in US cities. Carole King and Joni Mitchell were among those who wore ICE out badges. Billie Eilish, who won Song of the Year, also condemned the actions of federal agents.
No one is illegal on stolen land. I feel like we just need to keep fighting and speaking up and protesting, and our voices really do matter and the people matter.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 36 at 10,186. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some brighter spells later for the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Monday the 2nd of February. It's Benefits Britain, as the nation is to hand out the most benefits in the entire G7, and the number is escalating at considerable pace. This, as research seems to show, that for many families, it makes more sense to live on benefits than actually go to work. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, daylight robbery in broad sunshine in Richmond in southwest London. A video posted on social media, filmed by onlookers, showing two masked and hooded men, one of them wielding a massive hammer as he smashes the window of Gregory & Co. Jewellers in a side street in Richmond.
Calling the police! Yes, call the police!
It's the most extraordinary video. It's a sledgehammer, not a big hammer. It's a sledgehammer. And if you look at it, it's on the LBC app, the LBC website. You'll see the glass actually is, it shatters, but it's almost torn out as one piece. Instead of glass flying everywhere, it must be some special, a bit like your windscreen, I suppose, when they smash that. And then they're literally, fighting as people try, as the staff within the jewelers try and fight them off. Do take a look and we'll talk about that. Plus, the problems and the number of young people referred for addiction to video games, the treatment then required, the number being referred has risen by some 500% in 6 years. Rory is a 23-year-old university graduate who told us...
As the number of children being referred for video game addiction treatment increases, I'm Rory. A graduate has experienced gaming addiction, and I'll be speaking with Nick shortly.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, it could be a first for Britain. Set to become the biggest spender on benefits in the whole of the G7. Analysis by one newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, of Office for Budget Responsibility, or OBR, data shows the UK is on track to spend 2.2% of GDP on incapacity and disability benefits towards the end of the decade. The latest internationally comparable figures from the OECD, which in turn is the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, which suggests this would be by far the highest of any G7 nation. Now, there are some facts and figures. I'm going to try and cut those down a little bit so I don't blitz them with you at this very busy time of the morning. But this is something that the government can say that it is at least aware. Here is Work and Pension Secretary, quite new in the post at this point, speaking to me towards the end of last year about this very story.
Feature of the welfare state in recent years, which I think has troubled a lot of people, is this fork in the road, or this binary divide between people who are classed fit for work and they go down one track and they go to the job centre, and there's lots of expectations about looking for a job and so on. And then there's unfit for work, where people are given benefits and frankly nothing else. And I want to deal with that fork in the road in a much more active way by offering help to people who are long-term sick and disabled to help them back into work.
Now here, as I said, I've tried to cut some of these figures down. The latest OECD figures show that the UK was in the middle of the pack in G7 for spending on sickness and disability for the years 2021 through 2023. It was at 1.3% of GDP. That's less than Italy, which comes in at 1.8, France at 1.8, Germany at 1.5. But OBR forecast from November shows the figure for the UK has jumped to 2%, and now it was going to 2.2%, making it far and away the most expensive, or the most benefits being handed out. What does it mean? Well, the next year, the projected spending in total Social Security, total, okay, so not just, is £323 billion. That's more than the health service. Now, I appreciate that's everything. That's not just sickness and incapacity, but that's £323 billion. Now, some research done, and we're going to be speaking to someone from the group in a moment. Some research done for the Centre for Social Justice has pointed out that a jobless single parent claiming for anxiety and a child with ADHD will get in the region of £37,000 per annum, and that's around £14,000, and if they're living on the national living wage. So, again, I'm very fortunate. I have not, and I doubt that I will now, but in the need of benefits. I'm of an age where I don't even know that I qualify, to be honest with you. So that's it. I've made it. I've got over the threshold. I've never had to be in receipt of benefits. I'm very, very fortunate. Is it as easy as people make out? Are you able to ring me and say, you've no idea the hurdles I have to get through for help because my daughter has ADHD, my whatever it might be, I need assistance because of that. What is the reality? Because, candidly, and this was very alive a couple of weeks ago, we all accept we're living in a very dangerous world. You just have to look at Iran, and if you don't want to look at Iran, look at Russia. And if you don't want to look there, look at China. If you don't want to there, look at, and on, I can take you around the world. And we've been robbing our defence budget to pay our benefits budget. We've been getting cheap military insurance, if you will, from the United States, while paying more and more people not to go to work. How much longer can that continue? Well, I mentioned the Centre for Social Justice, Ben Gregg, Senior Researcher and Head of Welfare. Give us an idea of some of the other findings you and your colleagues have unearthed. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, so this weekend we published a little bit of research that found that someone who is a single individual who's economically inactive and is claiming a combination of out-of-work and health-related benefits can be making about £25,200 per year, which is more than the after-tax wages of about 6.2 million workers in the UK. And we're concerned that this is pointing to quite a concerning shift in the structure of our benefit system, where health benefits are becoming sort of de facto part of the out-of-work benefit system. Now, and we think it's bad for claimants as well as for society.
Mr. Gregg, something like this doesn't happen overnight. Presumably previous administrations have been complicit on this, dating back year after year after year.
Yeah, we think this is a long-term trend. It's a shift that in some ways started pre-COVID with changes partly because of courts around some of the eligibility requirements around health-related benefits. It's accelerated through COVID. But as you touched on earlier, it's notable that we're, as a country, quite exceptional in the rise in sickness benefit, particularly disability benefit claims we've seen. I think some of the data is that of comparable countries, the only other country that's seen an increase is Denmark, and theirs is about half the size that our increase is.
Is it your sense that in some instances it's too easy to be in receipt of some of these benefits?
So we're concerned really with the structure of benefits and the incentives that that's putting in front of people. We a large part of the rise in claims that we've seen has been around mental ill health conditions. And we did do a survey of GPs who obviously, for many people, can be sort of the gateway moving from work into worklessness around the FitNote system. And the GPs themselves, 85% said that they're concerned that the ups and downs of life are starting to be over-medicalized as mental ill health conditions. And particularly many of them were saying, you know, in a 10-minute appointment where they're being confronted with someone who's has a range of issues, they're facing the choice of, do I give this person a FitNote that signs them off work, moves them out of the workplace, which there's a lot of research that shows that can be a protective factor, particularly around mental health, to be in the workplace, to have that social setting, the purpose that that gives. But the GP faces that quite sharp choice in such a short appointment. Or do I have time to do the harder work of sort of connecting people to the right services, getting them the support they need? And our concern is currently what the welfare system is doing is encouraging the first choice rather than the second choice of actually helping the people.
Lastly, what are those ups and downs to which you refer? Give me an example.
So, I mean, it can be obviously a range of things. We're talking about sort of the contrast perhaps between mental well-being and how people can confront difficulties in their work and how that can sort of start to blur the line between that and diagnosable mental health conditions. I mean, particularly the research we're looking at the weekend, it's, again, this is about structures and incentives. It can be understandable that if there is a financial incentive there, there's in the structure of benefits, there's good reason to want to swap what might be a low-paid, quite difficult job, where there might be quite a period of time before the sort of progression away from that insecurity and instability for what seems like a relatively comfortable existence on health-related and out-of-work benefits.
I will leave it there, Ben Gregg. Thank you. Your senior researcher and head of welfare at the Centre for Social Justice. Listening is Sumi Rabindrakumar, who's Director of External Affairs and Communications at the Trussell Trust. Of course, that's the charity working with food banks across the whole of the United Kingdom. Joining me now, what do you see, you and your colleagues who work with the Trussell Trust, what do you see as the reality on the streets here? Good morning.
Morning. If you ask food banks across the UK, we can provide clear evidence that the reality of living on social security support when you are disabled is extremely difficult. 3/4 of people referred to food banks in the Trussell community are disabled. That means they are struggling to afford the essentials. And often that's because it's simply very difficult to access that support in the first place. A lot of support that food banks do is provide those routes to help people access financial support so that they don't need to turn to a food bank again. I think it's also important to remember what this social security support is for. So on average, life costs more if you're disabled. There's very clear evidence of that. And the comparisons being made in this analysis relate to people who have been assessed to be sick or disabled to the extent that they're deemed unable to work, so they get the UC health element. And on top of that, they're assessed that their health condition affects their mobility in day-to-day life. So very clear thresholds, and that's why they get PIP. And in general, when you look at surveys, the general public agree that it's right that any of us in those circumstances should have support that means that we can afford the essentials and those extra living costs to manage our illness and disability. So there is a kind of public consensus that that support is needed for that very basic level of living standards.
But why would it appear we're so much sicker than the rest of the G7?
So we think that is another important question. It's a different question from whether the level of support is right. And I think what's right in this analysis is that we should be looking at the structure of support and the level of support and the types of support around disabled people. We would agree that the system doesn't work particularly well for disabled people at the moment, and that's partly why we are seeing people at food banks.
My point about other G7 nations, that's what, you know, I take you to Italy, I take you to France, I take you to Germany. Nothing like the same level of sickness. Why might that be? Are we too generous in our payments?
So I think this is the point, is that when we look at what happens at food banks, it is very difficult to draw the conclusion that payments are too generous. Okay. Already people are struggling to afford the essentials. I think what's important is to remember both that it's actually very rare to be worse off in work than out of work. One of the things of the universal credit system was it was specifically designed to improve work incentives, and it's actually been relatively successful in that. Okay. And so when you are on a low income through low pay, earning the minimum wage, you also, in addition, have access to that same social security support system.
Okay, I must leave it. I'm grateful for your time. Thank you, Sumi. Sumi Rabindrakumar is Director of External Affairs and Communications for the Trussell Trust Charity. All right, come to your calls on that. Easier to be in benefits than be in work. One thing you can't move away from is that, regards other G7 countries, we are the sickest. Why? Meanwhile, in other news, some people who were up to some criminal work at the weekend.
Daylight burglary this weekend as men wielding hammers break into a jeweller's in Richmond. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott at the scene with the latest.
And the video is truly shocking. It's available on the LBC app, the LBC website. The 9:15 LBC News headlines now, though. Dominic Ellis.
There are calls for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following the latest revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year, and people found to be advertising illegal migration routes on social media could face up to 5 years in prison from today. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Bright spells in the far west of Scotland. Later, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The North Circular Road is closed westbound at the A10 junction at Edmonton. It's following an accident and there are delays all the way back to Walthamstow, but all the surrounding routes are extremely congested. The M25 has reopened anti-clockwise. It was closed briefly at junction 24 at Potter's Bar to recover a lorry which broke down. That's all happened now, so it's all open, but it's still slow from junction 25 at the A10. Very busy in Chelsea. The King's Road is partially blocked both ways at Sloane Square. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central and Bakerloo lines, and LNER, Great Northern and Thameslink services are delayed by about 20 minutes between Peterborough and Stevenage.
This is LBC.
Ah, Benny's parents, thanks for coming.
Hiya.
So, Benny has really blossomed this term.
You're telling me? He outgrew his bike. We sold it on eBay.
Oh, that's not quite what I meant.
It's free to sell on there.
Free to sell?
Easy too. Sold Benny's bike, your guitar, my jacket.
You sold my guitar?
Shall we talk about Benny?
When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March. 25% deposit. Finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Here at Southeastern, we know a bit of good news goes a long way, however big or small it may be. So we wanted to let you know that we're continuing to make improvements across our network. From sprucing up our trains and many of our stations to make your journey nicer, to improving the network to minimise delays, we're investing in making your journey with us better, one step at a time. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/betterjourneys.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Benefit Britain, the sickest nation among the G7, and the number of claimants rocketing, particularly since COVID, unseen in other countries. Why? Nick's in Holland Park. Nick, why is it? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Fraud on an industrial scale is what I'd call it. It's interesting to see that the uptick in disability benefits. Elderly people like me who don't know anything about disability always think of disabled people. You know, you see the symbols on the tube, people in a wheelchair, people who are blind. In fact, almost all of the uptick in the number of people claiming disability benefit is for invisible ones. In other words, the ones you can fraud. I've got a headache, I'm depressed. And of course, you do the maths. Your first guest was absolutely right. He pointed to a single person on disability benefit and unemployment benefit able to get $25,000 a year. But now look at the other side of the equation, the poor sop who's paying for that. I've done the maths, a minimum wage 40-hour a week. So you've got to do a full 40 hours. Just about gets $26,000, but then you've got to pay tax on it. So you actually end up on doing 40 hours a week worse off than the person who's not working. Who would not do it? And of course, they're all invisible disabilities because people can say, "Oh, I've got a headache. I'm depressed." It's absolutely insane that anyone is getting money for these things. These people should have their welfare cut off, and the people who really suffer. It's the poor minimum wage sops who are paying taxes to pay for these people.
I'm almost ready to join your crusade, but I think there is a fraud. How are we going to make sure that those who are in genuine need, people with genuine disabilities that you referenced earlier, that they don't get caught up in the net? That's my one concern, Nick, for your draconian approach.
Easy. Anyone who really can't work, if you have a serious disability and you can't get to an office, you can't work. There are people, you know.
But some people are mentally depressed, Nick. Sorry to talk over you, sir, but you will accept some people can't.
Depression is not a disability. Period. It's ridiculous. What? In fact, the worst thing you can do if you're depressed is not work.
No. I mean, mild depression. If you've got severe depression, you can't get out of bed, Nick. No, you won't.
Ditto. You've got to be made to get out of bed. You've got to get out of bed to eat and go to the toilet. Otherwise,
I know what you're saying, but that's a bit like saying to someone who's got mental health issues, just pull yourself together. But Nick, it doesn't. You must accept it doesn't work like that.
It should work like that.
Many things.
But this is it's open to fraud, Nick. And how many of those people genuinely can get it? By the way, these people who are getting, you know, possibly a single person getting $25,000, you don't think any of them are then also going out and doing side hustles and getting money elsewhere?
And I want that closed down yesterday. But also, I don't want the legitimate. You don't recognise there will be legitimate people with clinical depression that is almost akin to wanting to take your life.
There will definitely be people in a tiny number of people, but I don't think that justifies the industrial scale fraud on the other side. No system is perfect.
Indeed.
But this is so bad that actually a few people slipping through the gaps, which probably happens now anyway, will be an acceptable price of not impoverishing the poor working people in this country who actually do drag themselves out of bed to go out to do jobs that other people don't want to do.
Yeah, alarm clock Britain, it's what it's known as, and it's paying for benefits Britain. I hear exactly what you say, Nick. We're almost on the same page. Have yourself a good day. Thank you. Ashley in Beaconsfield, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Your last caller stole my thunder slightly. He's absolutely correct. And this utter madness and chaos cannot happen. The benefit system needs to be means tested higher and way above of where it currently is means tested. We're paying for far too many people that are just lazy and don't want to go to work.
But my same point, Ashley, as I put to Nick, how do we make sure that those in genuine need aren't caught up? Because I'm with you so far.
The way that you do that is you treat it like a business in the sense of you means test every single person that's on benefits of whatever description that is and however it's segmented. I'm not entirely sure. I've been very fortunate that I've never ever had to claim any benefits.
No.
And we touched on mental health, and I've been there, Nick, and I've honestly not claimed anything. But the way that you deal with that is making sure that anyone that comes to this country legally or illegally isn't allowed any benefits for the first 10 years until they've paid into the system. Secondly, you then means test in a way that you threshold different, you band it into different thresholds. There are people out there, Nick, that genuinely need help, and those people are absolutely fine to claim what they need. But there are equally millions of people out there that are capable of going to work, that just don't want to go to work.
You're right. You're right, as Nick was right. but we have got to keep an eye on those who will have genuine, invisible disabilities. They don't manifest themselves the same way as the person, the woman with the white stick because she's blind, or the person in his wheelchair, whatever it might be. We'll come back to this conversation in a moment. Now, two people who were at work at the weekend shocked everyone in the area. Two masked thugs using a sledgehammer smashed the window of a jeweller's in Richmond, which is a fairly affluent part of London, out in southwest London. And LBC's Helen Hoddenott is in that very street. I think it's called, from memory, Paved Court. She joins me now. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. That's right. I'm talking to you from a quintessentially chocolate box corner of southwest London. I am on Paved Court, a tiny cobbled street leading to Richmond Green, which will be well recognised by any Ted Lasso fans as the location of his favourite pub. This street is lined with bougie cafes, delis and salons, and Gregory & Co Jewellers, which at 10:30 on Saturday morning was targeted by two masked men wielding a huge sledgehammer as they smashed through the reinforced window, ripped it off and took armfuls of jewellery from the from that display. Here's a clip filmed from the opposite business.
Calling the police!
Yes. Calling the police! Yes. Yes.
In that video, you can see the owners of the jewellers desperately trying to stop the thieves from inside the shop, reaching through the display to try to block them. Charles is a regular customer and told LBC it's a family-run business.
I'm heartbroken. These are lovely people, you know, a lovely couple, been shopping there for years, me and my wife, and had some great jewellery from them. You know, they it's the perfect quality of jewellery that they sell there.
So on Saturday morning, in full view, the thieves took their haul and ran off, with police saying they're treating it as an aggravated burglary, but no arrests have been made. The shop this morning is boarded up, and people here have told me it's shocking but not surprising.
Police station up there, they closed down. They built a new one up here, refurbished it, and closed that down. Crime's getting worse, and we've got less police. You've got to be around, you've got to be seen, surely at least. Especially if someone's going to break in at 10:30 on a Saturday morning. It's not the early hours of the morning. There's plenty of people around, but there's no one to do anything about it.
I think people are being more brazen. They're like, well, there's no police around. We can get away with that. And I've seen, like, generally in London, there's been, like, a lot of robberies, jewellery stores in particular. So they're just basically hammering the windows down, stealing what they can.
So policing very much at the front of people's minds here. And because of cuts, Richmond is set to become one of the five London boroughs with no police front desk at all. Gareth Roberts is the Lib Dem leader of Richmond Council and told LBC it's not acceptable.
I think what we're seeing is the necessary consequences of the policy of closing, you know, police front counters and police stations across the capital. If the police are seen to be moving away from retrenching from town centres, even if it is a front counter, that has a huge psychological boost to say that there is a police presence here, there is somebody within moments away that can come and offer assistance. And with the mayor and with the Metropolitan Police starting this procedure of closing police front counters, I think it's just going to embolden criminals.
So the mayor's office hasn't yet responded to my request for comment this morning, but has previously said that this is about making cuts to deliver frontline policing. And it's not just this plush part of London which is feeling the creep of crime, Nick. It's also been reported over the weekend that Tom Cruise has moved out of his £35 million flat in Knightsbridge after an armed robbery on a Rolex store below his building. He used to rave about the UK and apparently enjoyed morning jogs around Knightsbridge, but now feels the city has declined, is no longer safe to live in, and he's reportedly upped and moved back to the States because of it.
Helen Hoddenott reporting from Richmond. Check it out, as I say, on the LBC app or the LBC website. Now, there's a spate of these jewellery robberies. 2 days prior to that Richmond incident, men targeted a jewellery shop on the Uxbridge Road in Shepherd's Bush. Same tactics, a sledgehammer. Police arrived on the scene within 3 minutes, and they nicked a 33-year-old man, so we have to stop there. but police are still hunting a group of armed robbers who smashed their way into a Rolex shop in Knightsbridge 2 weeks ago. Six suspects wearing motorcycle helmets threatened staff and members of the public with weapons, including machetes. They stole tens of thousands of pounds worth of watches. They left the stolen motorcycle they'd used as they crashed into the building. Meanwhile, the mayor is telling us that we're safe in London, as is the Commissioner of the Met. I can't wait to have him in again. Get the Commissioner of the Met in, or indeed the Home Secretary. How does the mayor continue to peddle these obvious untruths? And just to finish, as Helen Hoddenott did there, Tom Cruise, his people saying that the Rolex robbery, that's the last one they mentioned with the stolen motorbike, cemented his feeling of lack of security. He, this is Tom Cruise's people, often loved to take a walk around the area. It seems like Knightsbridge is becoming less safe by the week. He felt the area has declined in the past year or two. Now that's Richmond, which is quite well-heeled. That's Knightsbridge, which is extremely well-heeled. How are you feeling about the part of London in which you live? Are you getting out? Are you moving out to the sticks? If you could, would you move out? How safe do you feel? Because what we hear from local and central government, I'm afraid the Met at times, is utter cobblers. We'll pick up on that. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The 9:30 News, Dominic Ellis.
There are calls for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following the latest revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. The former cabinet minister resigned from the Labour Party last night, but has denied claims he received £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. The Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt has opened for the first time in more than a year. The reopening is a key part of President Trump's plan to end the conflict in Gaza. And people found to be advertising illegal migration routes online could face up to 5 years in prison from today. It's part of changes to the Border Security and Immigration Act. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some brighter spells in the far west of Scotland. Later, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job. Done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NSNI. Visit nsni.com.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stop Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Aldous Blaze, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Woods and cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk safety or lack of it in and around London. Nigel in Temple Fortune. Good to have you again, Nigel. What do you tell me? Good morning.
Thank you. Well, good morning. I think a lot of people seem not to realise, of course, that the Mayor of London is a crime commissioner for London.
He is.
He's also responsible for policing. You know that. I know that, but a lot of people don't seem to realise that.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting for me is that policing in London has solely collapsed. Now, I've just come back from a week in New York, and thankfully we missed the snow.
Well done.
But my wife... Thank you. My wife, and you know, it's pretty snowy there this time of year. My wife, who has a very, very senior role in social services...
Mm.
felt safer walking down some of the streets in New York than she does in the streets of London. And that's a bit of a statement to make.
Yep.
And, you know, as you know, we have a home in the US, and when my wife came with me for the first time before we were married, she felt safer there than here. And that really is quite astonishing. And I think, really, that Mark Rowley goes on about how safe London is. Well, let's not forget, if I'm not mistaken, there's still 300 serving police officers who have criminal convictions. And if it wasn't for the BBC, we'd have a few more misogynists and people in there who are racist. And I think what we have to appreciate, Nick, is policing is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for the elite. It's for everybody. Everyone deserves to feel safe. Everyone deserves to feel, if they call police are going to come, and everyone deserves to feel the police are actually going to do their job and not concentrate on 22 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone.
Nigel, you grew up in and around London when we had what were called police stations, and you and I have watched, probably at times with our heads in our respective, with our heads in our respective hands, bemoaning the fact they're closing them. How key an aspect of that do you think this is, that the guys could do what they did in Richmond on the weekend?
I think it's astonishing. I'll give you two examples. When I first started off in my job as a photographer many, many moons ago, before decimalisation, there was 163 operational police stations in London. I think there's less than 25. Mm. And you know, the poor lady, Sarah Everard, who was killed...
Yes.
You know, well, she was taken. Let's not forget, she was taken less than half a mile from a police station in Clapham, which had closed down. So yes, police stations are important for everybody to go there as a place of refuge, as a place to report things, and a place to go and have a chat with a friendly face if you just want to have a chat with someone.
Look after yourself. Glad you had happy landings. Take care. Ed says, I've lived in London from 1946 to 2013. I left after watching its decline. Since then, it's been a virtual no-go area for people my age. You don't say how old you are, sir. Katie says, this is a robbery. There was a robbery in Tooting Broadway in Boots. A man casually stole boxes of perfume. You'll see on the video, the lady seen is my friend. She's worked hard all her life. No one tries to help her. What should you do? This comes in from... Oh, do remember to sign them. Oh, Richard has. The Conservatives cut 20,000 police officers, 23,000 support staff, two-thirds of special constables. They also cut mental health services, prison and probation services, all cheered on by the right-wing media. A bit late to be complaining about it now, says Richard. We might return to that, but let's go to another story. A number of young people referred for gaming addiction treatment on the NHS is increased by 500% in just 6 years. Now, we need to say it is a very low figure initially, so that 500 has to be seen. But if you look at trends, and that's what we're examining here, trends are that it's growing by that amount. They're sent to a dedicated unit for video game-obsessed teenagers. Two-thirds of those referred for specialist help at the National Centre for Gaming Disorders in Earls Court were aged 13 to 15. And as I say, last year's figures are more than five times higher. Nine children referred last year were hooked on the fantasy video game World of Warcraft. No, me neither, but I don't have children in that age. Six, oh my God, I remember this. I remember this from the person who's now my stepson. Six were addicted to Fortnite. I think he was close to addiction. Five were obsessed with Minecraft. Five couldn't stop playing the 3D world of Roblox, whichever one says. Well, let's turn to Rory, who's in Scotland, who is a 23-year-old university graduate. But you've had some issues with this, Rory. Thank you very much for coming on the phone and being so open about it. How old were you when it started, and what was the game? Morning to you.
Absolutely, Nick. Good morning. I've been a gamer my entire life. Mm. And so realistically, when we talk about when I think gaming becomes an issue for someone, ultimately, I couldn't give you an exact year. I don't think it would be fair to do that.
Mm.
Because ultimately, the types of games that can cause addictive or can lean on addictive qualities are all around. Now, I would like to preface just by saying that I don't believe that all video games are addictive. I don't think as a medium video games are any more addictive than movies or TV. But there is a case that some developers and publishers who create video games do add addictive qualities to their video games that are actually inspired by how casinos operate and how they incentivize people to gamble.
Can you give me an example?
Absolutely. So in video games these days, there is a type of monetization system known as loot boxes.
Right.
So the idea is that you could pay £50 for a video game, say it's the newest FIFA, as it not is in the Football Federation, but the video game of that.
Yeah.
So you pay £50 for that video game, and the multiplayer component called Ultimate Team has a method where you can essentially gamble to get new players. To get new players on your team, you have to open what are called packs, mm-hmm. and you use that. To get that, you have to buy these packs with real-life money mm-hmm. In order to maybe potentially get Prime Messi, a 99-rated Messi. And the thing is that ultimately these high-level cards are locked behind these paywalled packs. So if you want to be the best in the game, you have to essentially engage with this monetization system.
Right. So they're working all that in. When did you realize you had problems?
I would think that my first issue was when I was maybe around 12. In particular, I used to play a game, and I think it was pertinent bringing up FIFA there, because you have to remember that FIFA is rated, 3 plus, or something around that age, maybe 7 plus?
I'm afraid I don't know, but yeah, go on. Yeah.
But it would be something like that. Sure. I think when I was 12, I first started playing a game called Team Fortress 2, and I think at the time it might have been rated 12, or I think it probably was rated 12 plus. Right. And it had this loot box mechanic, this gambling mechanic. And I would like to say that in Belgium, these loot boxes are banned because they are considered gambling. They are not in this country, but they are in some countries. They are considered active gambling mechanics. But that's when I started. So I would go on and say I would get, as a birthday present, I would get like a £20 voucher to spend. I would spend it on this video game. And I think the kind of scary thing about it, to try and get these cosmetic items that were deemed rare, the idea was that you could get hats for your character in the game, and they were hats. And some of these hats would have flames or cool effects on it. And as a 12-year-old, you know, you look at something like that, I want a hat that's on fire. That sounds really cool. And it's that type of thing where it sounds absurd, but as a teenager, particularly as a young teenager, that's the type of thing that appeals to your brain. It's light, it's bright, it's colourful, it's flashy, which of course is the exact same systems that casinos use to incentivize you to gamble by having these bright lights, loud noises, etc., etc.
Rory, have you got it under control now?
Absolutely. So,
how did you achieve that?
So I think my first thing was that I stopped playing. I began to avoid multiplayer games. I felt that they were problematic. Sadly, gambling controls in the same way that exists for real gambling don't exist for video games. But I think through willpower and through actively disengaging with these types of video games, I was able to take control of it. However, as for many people, because these mechanics aren't regulated, and particularly for people who are established problem gamblers, if you're attached to something, say, GamStop, the online system to prevent online gambling, it is a case that some people start engaging with these video games to get the same sort of reaction as they would gambling. For me personally, when I've played a slot machine in the past, in a past time, I do feel the same psychological response as I would when I use one of these loot boxes in a video game.
Lastly, for parents, grandparents, older brothers and sisters listening now thinking, gosh, this bloke, he's just explained what's happening to my son, my daughter, my grandchild. What would you say? How do you perhaps point out to someone that they might want to think about how much they're gambling, gaming?
I think one of the main things to consider is that I feel too many people get stuck in a loop, and the idea is there's a sunk cost fallacy that, oh, I've already spent £20 on FIFA, so I might as well chuck another £20 in or something like that. I think you have to be firm about that. You have to speak about what these spirals can lead to, particularly just speaking out as I am just now. I've watched several podcasts with people, with particularly content creators who create videos for FIFA. They've one of them in particular, if you don't mind if I give this plug next up to you,
go on, yeah.
Yep, so his name is Pieface, and he's a FIFA YouTuber. And he's spoken openly about his problems with gambling. And I think it's really important, coming from someone within that sphere who has influence over people, younger people who watch his videos, who also play the game, to hear from someone who creates for them and influences them, and who can speak out about these problems as well.
Rory, you've spoken out brilliantly, and I'm grateful to you. Good luck with you. Thank you, Rory, there, who's worked his way through it as he's been talking. Thanks again, Rory. Someone who's asked, and of course I will respect this, I've worked in video games for 30 years for major publishers and console manufacturers, I've been in very many meetings discussing how to make them addictive, to keep player time to its maximum. When I said I thought that was wrong, I was told it wasn't in the company's best interests. And we're coming back to safety. Matt says a robbery is a horrible experience. There is, though, an extreme amount of flashy wealth on display. We've become a more polarised society. There's possibly some truth on that. Actually. Nikki says, the London I was born in is no longer recognisable. I'm moving to Merseyside. I feel like a stranger in my own city. My journey to work has gone from 35 to 90 minutes. I hate this city now. I can't bear driving in it. I don't feel safe walking around in it. And I certainly don't want my children going to school in it. So Nick is on the move. Robert will be talking safety with you after this. 9.46, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
One of the architects of New Labour, Lord Mandelson, has resigned from the party after further revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. Gaza's Rafah border crossing with Egypt has reopened for limited traffic this morning. And drivers in the UK can now compare fuel costs at petrol stations online. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Bright spells in the far west of Scotland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The North Circular Road remains closed westbound at the A10 junction at Edmonton. It's following an accident and there are long delays all the way back to Walthamstow, but all the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. Very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10, and that was after that lorry broke down earlier. There's some temporary traffic lights on the high street at Hampton Wick at Lower Teddington Road, and that's causing lengthy delays in the area. On the trains, well, these problems that do continue for LNER, Great Northern and Thameslink. They're delayed by about 20 minutes between Peterborough and Stevenage after a track problem from earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
How on earth do you begin to unpack the impact of all the filth and horror in the so-called Epstein files? And do you think I might have a video game addiction?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Attention dogs. This is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Hiya. Kenny the hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Daylight robbery in Brixton. Tom Cruise on the move. And as I said earlier, you won't see him on the night bus. That's the reality of life in London. Robert in Brixton. Hello, Robert. Your story, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, great show. Yeah, thank I you. Think, as I said, the difficulty is there's no accountability or consequence. So the thieves, the robbers, just can't blanch to do what they want. Now, this is the thing. What about if the shop owners had licensed tasers?
How would that work?
Well, they would get a license, assuming you have a shotgun license, so you'd be accredited.
Okay.
And then if anyone came in, the crooks would be tasered.
Okay. Every shopkeeper or just high-end? Because obviously this jeweller's and, well, the three robberies I've talked to you about, Richmond, Uxbridge and...
I think high-end.
High-end. So we're not talking... And I'm not knocking this. I'm not demeaning this for a moment. But someone having a bottle of scotch nicked from the corner shop, I don't know we're necessarily going to give them a taser, are we?
No, we're not. No.
But if you're running the Chanel dress shop or a Rolex watch shop or something like that, you maybe would... And I think this would work. You know how you have to have accreditation to be like on a door these days?
Yeah, you do.
I think, again, you'll have to have gone through some kind of course, so you can't just pick the damn thing up and start shooting at people.
Yeah. And it would be ones that have got a history that most robberies are violent.
I'm not against it.
And the other thing is, which is related into the benefit side, is that, let me just give you an example. I'm a pensioner.
Yes, yeah? Sir.
So I get my pension, which is just around the personal 12,750.
Right.
I then take a job and I earn £10,000 a year. I get taxed.
Yeah.
If I'm a couple that get a pension and they also get two pip each, which is £900 a month,
mm-hmm.
they're on £40,000 with no tax. So why aren't benefits taxed just to contribute? I wouldn't say they're taxed at 20%, but it could be 15, 10 or 5. So I'm worse off because I'm receiving a benefit.
I hear what you say.
That's included as income.
Yeah.
So why can you get 40,000 on benefits, which would be old age pension and PIP?
I hear you. Can I ask you something? Just coming back to our first conversation, have you been lived and grown up most of your life in and around London, Robert?
I have, around the London and the Brixton area.
How have you seen the city change as regards to the sort of lawlessness that we witnessed in Richmond and Knightsbridge and other areas?
I think, surprisingly, in the centre, it's not too bad. You know, you come out of Brixton's underground and you get the same people... And they're pretty tame. They more or less stick to themselves. I think it's the robberies, you know, and the assaults on the buses and that type of thing. I think the high streets, as far as I'm concerned, if you're not, you know, wearing a Rolex watch, there's very little. I mean, I play a wheelchair basketball in Brixton.
Oh, right.
An amazing bunch of people, young lads and what have you, that buy into that. Most of them are disabled, you know, without... having amputees and the likes, but I think generally it's pretty safe.
Look after yourself, Robert. Thanks for responding on two areas. We're also thanks, Robert. Be safe. We're also talking about gaming addiction. Very, very interesting call from a 23-year-old. I was going to call him lad. He's not. He's a young man. 23 is a lad to me, but 23-year-old young man in Scotland, Rory, who recognised it and is working through it and has probably got it controlled. Let's hope forever. John's in Bedford. John, what are we talking about? Who are we talking about? Your son? Is that right?
Oh, yes, you prompted me to call when you stated the figures have increased by 500%. I'm dealing with a 15-year-old son. I believe he's totally addicted to gaming.
Tell me how you think that total addiction shows itself.
He would not like anything more to do than be on the games.
Yeah.
So he would sacrifice any activity, any social activity, to just be on the games. And...
if you have to go out, and you, I don't, let's just say his name is, I'm going to call him John. Come on, John, we've got to go out now. Is it really difficult to drag him out of his bedroom?
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be like a fun activity. It'll be something just from like basics, family stuff to shopping, but just something really funny. He won't go. His activities, he'll make excuse to not go to activities, and then he'll use, when you restrict the internet, he'll literally boycott all activities
Good
to say,
gracious.
Okay, well, exactly.
What's the games he's hooked on, John?
I've had social and Fortnite.
Fortnite. Now, the young man who is now my stepson was, I know you, but he could not wrench himself away from Fortnite. It was extraordinary to watch.
It's that, and it's a bunch of games as well. Minecraft, so he gets involved with servers, he creates things which are beyond my grasp of what he's actually doing, but it just dedicates so much time. So I've involved social services with him. I don't think there's enough adequate care. I don't think there's enough understanding of the addiction, and I don't think there's provisions in place with regards to our system of looking after young people. I know in China, they actually recognize it as a proper addiction, and they have massive facilities dealing with young children and teens that are addicted to gaming. But there's nothing here.
I've got to the point.
I've had the police come to my property because I've
good Lord.
Because it's Jekyll and Hyde. When he's the nicest boy ever, very bright, very sporty, everything. But when the internet gets switched off, because I'll give him a warning, an hour or half an hour, internet will go off, and it'll be a completely different crazy person.
You say he's sporting. Does he have time to do his sport if he's doing this all the time?
He will do the certain ones that he's always been doing, but he's dropped a few over the years, and he's dropped a few other activities over the years. But it's what I want to point out, it is almost like a crack addict. No one hustles more than a crack addict to get their fix, and he will do anything he can to get access to internet.
It is, I think, possibly playing on the same part of his brain. I hope he grows out of it. The young lad I know did, but obviously you've got major concerns and you've even got police activity, so I wish you well, John, with your boy. We've got a final minute. Debbie in Epsom, come back to the story with which we started this hour. Why Britain is so sick compared with the rest of G7. What do you want to tell me, Debbie? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I just want to very quickly preface my comments with this isn't bash the benefit claimants. Obviously, we need a system that supports people in need, but everybody talks about people they know that are claiming PIP, that are working on the side, etc., etc. Let's invest properly in investigative units to do surveillance, to catch the people that are doing this sort of thing. And why not introduce something like a Crime Stoppers line? People don't like to ring up and report people. We instinctively don't want to grasp people up.
Would you, but if your next-door neighbour was clearly milking the system, would you pick up the phone, Debbie?
I probably would, because I feel sorry for all the hard-working young families that I see, the alarm clock people that get up, as I was. I was a single mum who worked all my life, never put my hand out. I had a lot of problems, but I earned my living and, you know, I've got my own house, et cetera, through my own efforts. So I do resent the fact that we know that there's fraud on a massive scale. So let's introduce an anonymous Crime Stopper type line and properly finance investigative units. Because the word will still soon get round.
It would soon get round. Whether we'd want a nation like that, I don't know, Debbie. But I understand your anger, not least as you've been a lone parent and you've had all those challenges. Debbie, you have the last word. We're done for another day. The talking, of course, will continue with James O'Brien. If you missed today's show or any of today's show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien, the other side of the news, as I say here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I wonder whether the Epstein files can be seen as the sort of entire Trump project in microcosm. There's just so much, and even with the millions of documents released over the course of this weekend, it looks as if about half will never see the light of day as long as the current incumbent of the White House and his top team remain in post. But there's just so much that it's almost impossible to sort of pick a way in, to focus on the thing that is most egregious or most upsetting, most horrific. I just want to know how you're handling it and what you think the single most awful thing to emerge is.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, there are calls for Lord Mandelson to face an independent investigation following recent revelations about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. He resigned from the Labour Party last night, saying he wants to avoid causing the party further embarrassment. Lord Mandelson has denied claims he received £55,000 from Epstein in the early 2000s. And speaking last year, he insisted he didn't know about the late sex offender's crimes.
I was not knowledgeable of what he was doing, and I regret and will regret to my dying day the fact that powerless women were not given the protection they were entitled to expect.
Israel has partially reopened the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt. It's a key part of the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. It's thought the numbers allowed to pass through will be limited. People who are allowed to leave in the next 24 hours will be subject to strict security checks. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has accused Keir Starmer of humiliating Britain on his trip to China. Writing exclusively for the LBC app, Dame Priti Patel says he went to Beijing from a position of weakness and got nothing in return. The Prime Minister left with deals on visa-free travel, whiskey tariffs and the lifting of sanctions against four MPs. Shadow Chancellor Samuel Stride has echoed Dame Priti's comments while speaking to LBC News.
We've got some loosening of some visa arrangements. We've got a few percent off the duty for Scotch whiskey, but the biggest ticket item, which is the AstraZeneca investment that's been announced of about £11 billion, is actually an investment into China, not an investment by China into the United Kingdom.
Gold has continued to lose value sharply, amounting to its biggest drop in more than a decade. Silver is also down after big swings in Asia trading. Both metals recently hit record highs. It's thought investors turned to the precious metals due to growing geopolitical uncertainty. And drivers can now use and compare petrol prices across the UK using a new Fuel Finder website. The government has made it compulsory for garages to report their prices within half an hour of a change. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 10 points at 10,186. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with spells of rain in the north and in the east. Some brighter spells developing later in the far west of Scotland. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. We're going to wade straight into it. This tidal wave of horror that washed over the world at the weekend as millions more documents from the so-called Epstein files finally saw the light of day, although some containing absolutely hideous allegations against Donald Trump disappeared almost as quickly as they appeared. Make of that what you will. Where do you begin on a morning like this? Do you begin with the news that a man who was the de facto, or the husband of a man who was the de facto Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, was accepting tens of thousands of pounds from a character who, at the time, had already been convicted of sex trafficking? And this is the point that I think gets overlooked, is that the original conviction doesn't seem to have touched the sides of people's concerns or willingness to be associated with him. Your newspaper, if you take one, will also, or your internet news service, will also feature quite a lot of pictures of Peter Mandelson in his pants. Whose life is ever likely to be enriched by images of Peter Mandelson in his pants? And also, to make very brief light of what is a deadly serious subject, who still wears Y fronts? Don't at me. That is not a fa- Yeah, go on then. Who still wears Y fronts? 03456060973. That was a joke. Please don't ring in to tell me that you still... I'll put you straight onto Keith if you're ringing in to tell me that you still wear Y fronts. You're not getting on the radio. So,
the de facto deputy prime minister under Gordon Brown. I don't know, and we may never know, but it seems to me possible that Peter Mandelson was unaware of the extent of his husband's financial dealings with Jeffrey Epstein, but he wasn't aware of his own dealings and his own social dealings. All sorts of allegations swimming around. And then you have Andrew Windsor, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he chooses to call himself, facing a new legal threat, the Daily Mail reports, after a second woman alleged that Epstein flew her to Britain for sex. This is in addition to the Epstein revelations, which feature him lying on top of an apparently rather young woman on the floor of what appears to be Jeffrey Epstein's New York apartment. And then you have revelations or accusations, allegations about Bill Gates, about, you name them, they're in it. The rich and the powerful. And men. Always men. If, like me, and it's been a desperately unfashionable position to pursue in the UK media in recent years, but if you find yourself equally disgusted by sex abusers, irrespective of their ethnicity or religion, if you are as disgusted by the behaviour of Jeffrey Epstein and his mates as you are by the grooming gangs that have a large makeup in many cases of people, men with Pakistani heritage, then you'll be waiting to see what all of the people who've used Pakistani, or as they prefer to call them often, Muslim grooming gangs, and indeed attacking the United Kingdom. It'd be very interesting to see how high the horse is that they climb up onto today. Imagine inviting Elon Musk, who's all over the Epstein files, despite claiming that he had nothing to do with the man, inviting himself to parties and expressing a deep desire to get involved in some serious socializing. Imagine inviting him to comment at your rally, ostensibly to protect British women and girls, when these people were consorting with a man whose own conviction for sex trafficking was well established. And I feel quite naive on mornings like this. Do you know what I mean by that? I think it's probably male privilege, actually. I was talking about this with some friends last night, and we've all got daughters, and dads don't really know. Until Me Too came along, dads didn't really know what it was like to be a woman. I saw something online the other day, and it was supposed to be a joke. Like, so what would you do if you were a man for a day? And like, you're supposed to make a joke about sort of, you know, sexy things, or, I don't know, football or something. And this amazing woman, I wish I could remember who it was. You'll probably find it. She just said, I'd go out at night. I'd go out on my own at night. What would you do if you were a man for the day? I'd go out on my own at night. We were talking about this last night, and all of the women around the table were. Right, yeah, absolutely. And the men were a little bit, really? Oh, yeah, of course. That took a while. Always men. Always men. And, of course, one of the only people to be held to account for these activities, a woman, Ghislaine Maxwell, was dealing essentially exclusively with men on Epstein's Island and elsewhere. So I'm thinking of naivety and venality. Naive about the venality of it all. When we first talked about grooming gangs in the north of England, and unlike many people who've made an awful lot of money from pretending to care about the victims, and indeed even bringing some of the prosecution